Hello and welcome back. I am Mel Kay sitting in for Owen Schroyer. Great to see everyone today. It is Friday, thank God. A lot is going on. And I am honored to be here. And I will start off with a breaking news. It appears that the DOJ has released the transcripts of Ghislaine Maxwell's interview with Todd Blanche just a few weeks ago. And out of that interview comes multiple things, including that she says that she does not believe Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. She also says that Donald Trump had nothing to do with anything. She has never seen him inappropriate in any way. She only knew him socially. Of course, we all knew that, but now we are going to get more information from her, which is a change. I do want to remind you, though, that many of the victims say that Ghislaine Maxwell was just as vicious as Jeffrey Epstein. So for all the people out there that are wondering if she is going to get a pardon or a commuted sentence or anything like that, I would say that the victims would be against that. In the meantime, we do have a lot of breaking news today on a Friday, of course. Also, Pete Hegseth has fired Jeffrey Cruz, Defense Intelligence Agency under Biden. It looks like he is the person who leaked the preliminary report about the Iran attacks and now will be held accountable, we hope. In the meantime, as everyone knows by now, there was a raid this morning of John Bolton's house. And as they come out with boxes and boxes, we want to remind you that John Bolton has been around for a very long time. He has been very critical of Donald Trump, though he begged to be in his first cabinet or did not get put in there. Donald Trump gave him a job and then, of course, fired him later. Just for some context on the Bolton raid, we all remember back when he was being questioned about his book. And it was Royce Lamberth, the U.S. District Court judge from D.C. that came out and said that Bolton could have sued the government and sought relief in court. Instead, he opted out of classification review process before its conclusion. Unilateral fast-tracking carried the benefit of publicity and sales and the cost of substantial risk of exposure. This was Bolton's bet. If he is right and the book does not contain classified information, he keeps the upside mentioned above. But if he is wrong, he stands to lose his profits from the book deal that exposes him to criminal liability and imperils national security. He went on to say that Bolton has gambled with national security of the United States. He has exposed his country to harm and himself to civil and maybe potential criminal penalties. That was a while back. I do want to remind everyone he has been around a long time. He was a participant in the weapons of mass destruction lie that got us into the endless wars known as the War on Terror, specifically Iraq. He also was against Donald Trump meeting with North Korea, and of course that ended well. He's been a strict interventionist, pushing every war so far that we've seen, not to mention that he also wanted preemptive nuclear strikes on Iran recently. So Bolton is in hot water, and this is only the beginning. What is pretty hilarious to me is that they have already put out talking points on the left, which leaked, of course, because they're not the smartest people over there running the show. And it looks like they are saying that liberals should support Bolton, it says, for talking points. The second is that when the chips are finally down, he exhibited courage. He told the public what he saw. Another talking point basically is that he is maybe not always on the same side as foreign policy-wise, but he has always been a good person and in solidarity with the intelligence community. Of course, that's not a good thing as far as I'm concerned. On top of that, as you know, federal prosecutors secured evidence from FBI brass that James Comey, in fact, authorized classified leaks, but again, they declined to charge him. I actually have a clip of James Comey lying flat out to the American people in a deposition in front of the whole world that I'd like to play because it revolves around these new documents that came out. If we can play the clip of Comey being questioned by Chuck Grassley, I think it'll show the world exactly who we're dealing with.
Comey, have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
Never.
The ancient blue wizard is who I be.
The magic of methylene flows through me. These wars of info have gone through the ages to keep your minds locked in cages. Break free from the lies and save your soul, or the demonic agenda shall reach its goal.
Upon this field, with steel in hand, I guard the truth across the land. No tyrant's crown, no foreign laws shall pierce the shield of InfoWars. This dagger's point, both sharp and true, defends the rights for me and you. So grab your phone without delay, and go to the website if you may. Order your dagger to stand in the fight, before the globalists turn out the lights.
With Comey, and then I'll get into what came out today that proves not only that he lied to the American people, but that he lied under oath. Let's go jump to Comey, and then we'll come back.
Director Comey, have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
Never.
Question two on related. Have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
No.
Has any classified information relating to President Trump or his associates been declassified and shared with the media?
Not to my knowledge. There have been a variety of leaks. Well, leaks are always a problem, but especially in the last 3 to 6 months. Look, this is terrible. It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election. But honestly, it wouldn't change the decision. Everybody who disagrees with me has to come back to October 28th with me and stare at this and tell me what you would do. Would you speak or would you conceal? And I could be wrong. But we honestly made a decision between those two choices that even in hindsight, and this has been one of the world's most painful experiences, I would make the same decision. I would not conceal that on October 28th from the Congress. And I sent a letter to Congress. By the way, people forget this. I didn't make a public announcement. I sent a private letter to the chairs and the rankings of the oversight committees.
Did
I know it's a distinction without a difference in the world of leaks, but it was very important that I tell them instead of concealing. And reasonable people can disagree, but that's the reason I made that choice. And it was a hard choice. I still believe in retrospect the right choice, as painful.
And there you have it. Comey lying to the whole world without any shame whatsoever. So let's talk about what came out about Comey. According to the memo that was declassified by obtained by Just the News, an investigation by U.S. Postal Inspector Service agents revealed that FBI General Counsel James Baker and Comey's chief of staff, James Rubicki, were involved in leaking classified information to the New York Times in October of 2016. It says that the investigation also revealed Baker disclosed USG classified information to the New York Times under the belief he was ultimately instructed and authorized to do so by FBI Director James Comey. It goes on to say that, for example, during interviews, Baker indicated FBI Chief of Staff James Rubicki instructed him, Baker, to disclose the information to the New York Times, and Baker understood Rubicki was conveying this instruction and authorization by James Comey. So whatever he's saying right now, it is just the beginning of getting to the bottom of that. Not to be outdone, I've also found out that Ian Sams, who was going around, he was the spokesperson for Joe Biden, touting his mental fitness over and over to all the people. Well, in his deposition, he comes out to say that he has only dealt with in person Joe Biden twice in the 4 years that he worked for him. But he came out even after the disastrous debate with Donald Trump, which led to him leaving the race, and continued to say that people were making things up. He also attacked her when her came out after the classified investigation into Joe Biden's classified document handling, and attacked her saying that he was making up things and that he was was not clear with what was going on, and that Joe Biden was just fine. On top of that, we find that there was actually people in the Biden DOJ that were questioning the auto pen pardons, particularly Associate Deputy Attorney General Brad Weinsheimer. He came out and said that when he was going through the pardons, he saw that there was a real problem because the Karine Jean-Pierre and others were saying that he was pardoning people that had minor offenses. In this White House document that came out, the lawyer says, one other important note, in communication about the commutations, the White House has described those who receive commutations as people convicted of nonviolent drug offenses. I think you should stop saying that because it is untrue and misleading. As you know, even with exceedingly limited review we were permitted to do of the individuals we believe you might be considering for commutation action, we actually identified 19 people that are highly problematic. He goes on to say that, again, these people did not meet with Joe Biden and they did not get full information on why these people were chosen for commutations or pardons. And again, this leads to the idea of, does Joe Biden even know who was pardoned, how they were pardoned, why they were pardoned, or did this come from somewhere else? It has been an exceedingly bad week for the Clintons, I would say. First and foremost, Bill and Hillary Clinton, according to the investigators that are looking into Jeffrey Epstein now, Bill Clinton is number one on their list to speak to. James Comer said he is very interested in hearing from both Hillary and Bill Clinton, but specifically Bill Clinton. He goes on to say, while the department undertakes efforts to uncover and publicly disclose additional information related to Mr. Epstein and Ms. Maxwell's cases, it is imperative Congress conduct oversight of federal government enforcement of sex trafficking laws generally, and specifically its handling of the investigation and prosecution of Mr. Epstein and Ms. Maxwell. He goes on to state that the Clintons have never been questioned and that he looks forward to speaking with them. Following that, we find out that Hillary Clinton is facing an ethics review of her law license. Seems a little late for that, but it turns out that right now there is a formal review of the conduct of Hillary Clinton, a licensed attorney in the state of Arkansas, in connection with her actions during the 2016 presidential campaign. The complaint alleges that Hillary Clinton's campaign elevated unverified, unvetted information to injure her political opponent. This revelation demands an already overdue inquiry into Hillary Clinton's fitness as a member of the Arkansas bar. If that's not enough already, we found out this week also that the IRS began investigating Hillary Clinton, as many of us knew and were watching Huber at the time, in 2019. But a memo was circulated that said to lay off, that we can't talk about the Clinton Foundation. Years after FBI was forced to shut down multiple corruption probes into Bill and Hillary Clinton's charity, the IRS under President Trump began a criminal tax investigation into the Clinton Foundation and its dealings with other players on the global charitable stage, but then abruptly stopped working with whistleblowers in 2019, according to IRS memo and internal emails. Can't talk about Clinton Foundation, a memo said in recounting how IRS agents suddenly cut off contact with the whistleblowers Moynihan and Doyle, who have been fighting all these years to get this information out. As we know, the Clinton Foundation has been under a lot of scrutiny. In the meantime, what we know for sure is that the Clinton Foundation was attached to things in it, not just Haiti, but Beyond Borders Organization, USAID, Act Blue, Soros Open Society, and many other operations along the way. We have to remember that we still have intact the International Organization Immunities Act, which needs to be rescinded. It's from 1947, is giving the BIS, the World Bank, the IMF, the UN, all of the tentacles of the UN, 63 banks connected to the BIS, including our Fed, not to mention all of the NGOs that are connected with the UN in any way, which may include some of the Clinton NGOs as well. We know Bill and Melinda Gates, Gavi is connected to that, and they all have immunity from oversight almost completely. Apparently, particularly, they do not have liability to lawsuits or audits or investigations. If President Trump really wants to do something very big about the public-private partnership that rules above our nation, rescinding the International Immunities Act for international organizations from 1947 would be a great start. Again, some of us, most of us, looked at John Huber's investigation into the Clinton Foundation and had high hopes, but then they failed to ever get a grand jury, as far as we know, to this point. So it looks like this is coming into play now. We also have a whistleblower that has come forward, an anonymous whistleblower, that says that he worked for DNI 2015 to 2020, and he told John Durham he stumbled upon enigmatic data while leading the investigation of alleged Russian cyber activity for the intelligence community assessment on Russian meddling in 2016. He said that that discovery took place in December 2016. When President Obama ordered the ICA. He goes on to say it seems only brief interaction was occurring. In some cases, no authorized access or even attempted access was detected on victim systems. Though the suspicious activity initially was attributed to foreign actors, there was no analysis to prove that there were any foreign actors involved. Of course, many of us have believed that all along. But in the meantime, the Clintons are having a bad week. To continue that bad week, we find that the FBI has exposed 19 hidden Clinton Foundation bank accounts, not to mention that the Clinton family has approximately 50-plus organizations. So besides the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, Clinton Climate Initiative, Clinton Health Access Initiative, there are 48 other foundations, funds, LLC, and shell companies connected to the Clinton family. Many of them are unclear, but we do know that one of them that came out of the investigation, the Clinton Foundation in four different states, found in the IG report that Hillary Clinton and foundation had crimes against children. It does not indicate which foundation they are referring to, but of course, much of that evidence is on the Anthony Weiner laptop. The Anthony Weiner laptop supposedly is still out there, but we never got the information and have only found out recently that it was never really searched beyond the original NYPD search. On top of that, there are apparently flash drives out there that have all the information that we could want, and yet they are still not releasing that to this day. I also want to remind people that Jeffrey Epstein, in his testimony under oath, said that he started the Clinton Foundation. But something you might not know about the Clintons, going back to MENA, Arkansas, is that the Clintons were involved in the Iran-Contra activities at the Arkansas MENA airport, and that was a front for CIA Southern Air Transport, and it occurred while Bill Clinton was governor. Just a few years into Clinton's presidential administration, Les Wexner and Jeffrey Epstein would buy Southern Air Transport and relocate it to Columbus, Ohio, where Les Wexner's L Brands was located, leading concerns among Ohio officials that both men were not only working with the CIA, but that Wexner's company might be linked to the CIA. That's something many people have not talked about and is still under question. Not to mention, as usual, Hillary Clinton's emails and the Chinese Energy Fund Committee. So we are talking about a major investigation being reopened into the entire Clinton Foundation at the same time that we are opening an investigation into Jeffrey Epstein and his relationship, finally, with the Clintons. I do want to remind everyone that the Hillary Clinton email scandal was never resolved. James Comey and the rest of them, Sally Yates and others, buried it. We know about the tarmac meeting with Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch. That was very shady to begin with, and then they ended the investigation. But in 2018, the ICIG report detailed a deep dive into metadata of Hillary Clinton's emails, which allegedly revealed that copy of nearly all of the emails were forwarded in real time to a known Chinese public company that was involved in collecting intelligence for China. The report, as I'll remind you, in 2018, said that the Chinese company that gained access to Clinton's emails was not a technology firm. Rather, the sources explained that it was a front group for the Chinese government located in Washington's Virginia suburbs. And again, this links Hillary Clinton back to that, but we also know that CEFC was related to criminality, it looks like, with Joe Biden's family as well, particularly with Hunter Biden. So at this point, the Clintons are kind of on the run, and yet we just found out that Donald Trump has sent Marines and cruisers down to Venezuela, which is interesting because another thing that we should be looking into with the Clintons is their island initiative. So the Clinton Foundation and Richard Branson started something called the 10 Island Challenge that was around Haiti. You know, Haiti was a favorite place of the Clintons. I believe they went on their honeymoon there. So they started a 10 Island Challenge in tandem with the United Nations that included Haiti, Dominican Republic, Jamaica, Aruba, Bahamas, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Colombia, Kenya, and Tanzania. What was this about? It was about bringing those 10 islands up to standards of travel, not just putting in ports, but also putting in internet, and all kinds of contractors came in that are connected to the Clintons. In the end, 21 islands were connected in this Clinton Global Island Initiative. And again, we also found out last week that not only that, but George Soros and his Open Society was very involved with the Hillary Clinton scandal. It turns out Leonard Bernardo, a top George Soros Open Society Foundation official and communications director to the Clinton Foreign Policy advisor during the Clinton campaign, Julian Smith, both were involved in the scandal, both were perpetuating it, and in an email, Bernardo from Open Society wrote, Hillary Clinton has approved Julia's idea about Trump and Russian hackers hampering U.S. election. That should distract people from her own missing emails, especially if the affair goes to Olympic level. The point is making the Russia play a U.S. domestic issue. So, say something like a critical infrastructure threat for the election to feel menace, since both POTUS Obama and VPOTUS Biden have acknowledged the fact that intelligence community would speed up searching for evidence that is regrettably still unavailable. Bernardo goes on to say, in absence of direct evidence, CrowdStrike and ThreatConnect will supply media and Russian main intelligence directive will hopefully carry it on. So again, not to be surprised that George Soros was involved in that, but what you should also know is that we are dealing with a situation in the world right now connected to Russiagate that is not being fully exposed, which is what was going on since Obama and his inner circle and the CIA, USAID, National Endowment for Democracy, and the crooked State Department overthrew the duly elected president in Ukraine in 2014. We all saw John McCain and Victoria Nuland and Klobuchar and all these people over there cheering on an overthrow of the elected government, putting in their own government. So I wanted to remind people that all of the things that have happened with Russiagate really hurt Donald Trump's ability to do any kind of detente with Russia. Then when Russiagate closed after the fake cover-up known as the Weissman-Mueller investigation, they kicked right off with Ukraine, so Trump couldn't really deal with Ukraine either. Then the fake Ukraine impeachment. So I wanted to remind people of what really happened back then. First, I want to play a clip of George Soros back talking about his involvement in Ukraine since back in 1993. I want to remind you that George Soros wrote his document, NATO World Order, in 1993 after we had promised Russia that we would not expand NATO. Shortly after that, Bill Clinton started expanding NATO. So let's take a look at George Soros talking about his involvement in Ukraine all the way back then.
George Soros, pleasure to have you on.
Same here.
First on Ukraine, one of the things that many people recognized about you was that you, during the revolutions of 1989, funded a lot of dissident activity, civil society groups in Eastern Europe, in Poland, the Czech Republic. Are you doing similar things in Ukraine?
Well, I set up a foundation in Ukraine before Ukraine became independent of Russia. And the foundation has been functioning ever since. And it played an important part in events now.
Do you think Ukraine will be able to assert a kind of independence from Russia and an alignment with the West? Not a specific alignment as in NATO, but a kind of orientation toward the West, or will the Russians always stop them?
No, Putin will try to destabilize Ukraine. The foundation has been functioning ever since, and it played an important part in events now.
Well, let's understand right now that this has been going on since the 90s when NATO got expanded. It is not a defensive force. We should not, in my opinion, be in NATO. We are not part of Europe. We don't need to protect Europe. We need to protect our country and reprioritize our nation. And on top of that, who really has been running Ukraine since the overthrow of that government, since, you know, George Soros was the most powerful man in Ukraine before that? Let's see the clip from Victoria Nuland telling you exactly who's been running Ukraine since 2014. This is, I believe, from that time period. Let's take a look at Victoria Nuland before the break.
And U.S. advisors serve in almost a dozen Ukrainian ministries and localities, helping to deliver services, eliminate fraud and abuse, improve tax collection, and modernize Ukrainian institutions. With U.S. help, newly vetted and trained police officers are patrolling the cities, the streets of 18 Ukrainian cities. In courtrooms across Ukraine, free legal aid attorneys funded by the U.S. have won two-thirds of all the acquittals in the countries. Treasury and State Department advisors have helped Ukraine shutter over 60 failed banks and protected the assets of depositors. And since there can be no reform in Ukraine without security, over $266 million of our support has been in the security sector, training 1,200 soldiers and 750 Ukrainian National Guard personnel, and supplying life-saving gear. In FY16, we are continuing that training and equipment of more of Ukraine's border guards, military, and Coast Guard.
Okay, so what we need to do is use our critical thinking. So that was 2015. Victoria Nuland is basically saying that the United States is not only funding and arming and doing all of the policing and justice and everything else going on in Ukraine. At the same time, Donald Trump miraculously wins, and all of a sudden, both Russia and Trump are maligned by the same people that overthrew the Ukrainian government and work side by side with George Soros. So we have to really start looking at the international implications of Russiagate. It was not just a crime against the people of the United States of America or the will of the people who voted for Donald Trump. They were not going to allow Donald Trump to go off track from the long-term game. If you want to ask me, you got a World War I, World War II, World War III that they're ramping up right now. It's the same people, the same money, the same objective, a unified Europe with a no longer existent Russia divided as per Brzezinski. And we know that Obama brought back in Brzezinski after he had been ousted, and also Madeleine Albright, Henry Kissinger. This was a long-term plan to destroy Russia from within, break up Russia, it's right in Brzezinski's book, and then run the world basically from Brussels and Geneva. So we do have to question how this affected our foreign policy, if it was a globalist action, because we know at the same time that not only was the United States under Barack Obama, the intelligence agencies, FBI, CIA involved, but so was MI6, and so was Australia. It was a Five Eyes nation. So the West wanted to continue down the path and did not want to give Donald Trump the chance to have detente with Vladimir Putin or work out a new way forward for the world. So I would say that the people that are involved in Russiagate didn't only have a grand conspiracy against the people of the United States. Frankly, I think that they betrayed the world. Had we had the conversations during that time that were free and fair, we probably would not be even close to where we are, let alone have there ever been a war in Ukraine. And just yesterday, we found out the true number. 1.2 million Ukrainians have died. There is no reason for this to go on. And frankly, the entire situation in Western, in the West in general is falling apart at the seams. And no matter what they want to do, the truth is the people are seeing this for what it is. But we, the people, have to understand Russiagate was much bigger than the United States of America, and it harmed this world, and everyone involved should go to jail. As far as I'm concerned, this is not just a small getting rid of Trump. This was interfering with things that could have happened that would have bettered the world and created peace and ended up not in the precipice of World War III. We will see you right after the break, but you know what? We got to be honest with ourselves if we want to save America.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more Methylene Blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up a pump.
Well, you can always get it at theologyshow.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, theoxygenstore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it if you're on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychological. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Unveiling the truth behind the globalist curtain. Welcome to the war room.
Hello, I am back. It is Mel Kay from the Mel Kay Show sitting in for Owen Schroyer. I really want to talk about the EU. We are at a place right now with the EU where we have to really look at the history, where we are, and where we are going. What is going on there right now is that they are asking the United States and the world to give NATO protections without NATO, Article 5 protections, to Ukraine at the same time that they are saying that they are going to hold off on solidifying the deal that they just made yesterday because they are having problems with our Digital Services Act objection. And we are not just going to fold and allow them to do that. At the same time, we found out that Viktor Orban and Slovakia have put out a letter to NATO basically saying that they believe that Ukraine continues to target vital infrastructure inside Hungary, carrying out the largest humanitarian program in its history to support the war-stricken population while also providing Ukraine with a significant share of its gas and fuel supplies while Ukraine is attacking them, as well as 40% of the imported electricity. They are asking the commission to fully uphold its commitments and guarantee the security of all members and to have Ukraine stop attacking them. At the same time, we have van der Leyen out there talking about how history, she says this in an interview, that there is no oligarchy in Europe. She says history is back and so are geopolitics. And we see that what we have perceived as a world order is becoming a world disorder, triggered not least by the power struggle between China and the United States, but of course also Putin's imperialistic ambitions. Hello, that is not what's going on. Frankly, the people that want the war are the European Union. They continue to push for war because, as we know, war is how they consolidate power and profit after the war. Reconstruction. We've been fooled twice in the past. Shall we be fooled again? I'd like to play a clip of van der Leyen telling us that we need to have Article 5-like protections for Ukraine going forward, as well as protect them through 2030. Let's take a look at her. Van der Leyen.
Ukraine must be able to uphold its sovereignty and its territorial integrity. There can be no limitations on Ukrainian armed forces, be it cooperation with or other third countries or assistance from other third countries, no limitations for the Ukrainian armed forces. As I've often said, Ukraine must become a steel porcupine, undigestible for potential invaders. We welcome President Trump's willingness to contribute to Article 5-like security guarantees for Ukraine. And the coalition of the willing, including the European Union, is ready to do its share.
Well, the European Union has basically captured all 27 nations inside the European Union with their net zero and commitment to Agenda 2030 and the international banking cartel plans for the world. They are not prioritizing humans at all, let alone the 1.2 million people who have died in Ukraine. Ukraine will have to be rebuilt. We know that BlackRock and Chase and others have already said that they would put $800 billion into the reconstruction of Ukraine. In the meantime, there's a very disturbing article that has come out about Ukraine out of Turkish media that is reporting that Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky's inner circle already transferred $50 million each month to two companies based in the United Arab Emirates, reportedly obtained through corrupt practices. The funds are said to be flowing to GFM Investment Group and GFM Holdings, linked to former Ukrainian state property fund advisor Andrei Gemrin, who is currently wanted internationally for alleged corruption and was arrested in France last year over money laundering and stolen assets. Ukrainian lawmakers are also denying that there is money disappearing, yet what we do know is that Vladimir Putin has said many times that he would like to have this come to an end, and he has put out what he would like, which is not change, no NATO, none of that. But apparently Zelensky continues to say that he will not go with that. But again, we have to ask ourselves, who is really running Ukraine? If you look at that clip earlier from Victoria Nuland and the one from the 90s of George Soros, it doesn't appear that Vladimir Zelensky even has that ability, first and foremost. Second, he has not been the president since last March. So Lavrov is coming out and saying, we don't know who we should be negotiating with. And at this point, I don't know who Donald Trump should be negotiating with. But hopefully, we will see some changes going forward. As far as the EU, they are not backing down, particularly when it comes to wanting to control the narrative on the information war that we are in. And frankly, it looks like they are going to hold hostage the tariff agreement that they made yesterday until we allow them to continue forward with the Digital Services Act. So at this point, who is really running Ukraine should be the first question. Second, if you look at what Victoria Nuland and Soros were saying, they were putting hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars into Ukraine since the 90s. So who is Ukraine for? What are they really building there? The people of Ukraine don't seem to matter. And in the meantime, we have a whole lot of other things going on in the EU, particularly when it comes to digital ID and track and trace surveillance. And right now we know that Bill Gates is out there talking about digital ID as the answer to, poverty. He is out there right now, put out a report through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that digital IDs are an effective tool against poverty. A global solution is making them available now. But what we see coming out of this is the modular open source identity platform that he is proposing. And of course, he funded along with the global public infrastructure, with a lot of partners from the World Economic Forum Global Public Private Partnership, as well as the Omidar Network. And anyway, this MOSIP, it is a fundamental global public infrastructure that includes a digital ID that will be given out to the third world to bring them into our world. He also insists that it will fight against terrorism, secure the border, environment, protect the environment, combat money laundering, help the unemployed, prevent pandemics, add help with artificial intelligence, and protect private property. A digital ID that he is creating, that he already created, the global public infrastructure, and ID 2020. So I guess he thinks that we have no idea what's going on. In the meantime, we also are a little bit disturbed here because I am not happy about anything having to do with track and trace surveillance in America. Frankly, the Patriot Act was unconstitutional beyond comprehension. And the only person who stood up was Ron Paul and said, how can we do this? It's so unconstitutional. But we were right after 9/11. The country was in chaos, and they pushed it through. Though the Patriot Act was written before 9/11, and of course, I believe it was attached to the Project for the New American Century, which was this militarizing the world through America by Rumsfeld and Cheney and all of the suspects that have been involved in the endless war known as the War on Terror. So in the meantime, we've already been tracked, traced, and surveilled beyond comprehension. The United States of America does still have a constitution and Bill of Rights, and privacy and liberty should be part of that. And the American people should be pushing back, because I'm not getting a clear divide as to where everything that is being created by Elon Musk, Palantir, Ellison, all these people, where the Constitution lives in cyberspace. Even if we get back our borders in terms of sovereign national borders on the ground, the real threat is the cyberspace. And I don't want the United States of America attached to Bill Gates' global public infrastructure that is going to be run by the United Nations and the World Economic Forum and their partners. And as of right now, I do not get any sense that cyberspace will be protected for the United States of America and for our citizens, separate from the global public infrastructure, which is interoperable, and they're selling at warp speed. In the meantime, the Genius Act is talking about having protocols for identification, while at the same time, Louisiana is saying that they want full age verification online for anyone that is going to some of the sites like Roblox. In the same time, we are being told that real ID is needed to travel. All of this seems antithetical to the Constitution of the United States. But Noah Harari had something to say about surveillance that I think the American people should listen to. This is not about left and right, Republican and Democrat. This is about liberty and why America is America. We cannot have a global public infrastructure that the United States is on with a global digital ID that is interoperable of the whole world. But that is what Agenda 2030 is, and it was always that. Birth to death, full track and trace surveillance of all humanity. Not just that, of human resources, animals, water, air, cyberspace. And this is very, very dangerous. And we, the people of the United States, are not stepping up and asking about the Constitution as surveillance comes up all over our inside, outside our homes, all over the internet. And, of course, we are battling the EU with their Digital Services Act. So let's listen to Harari about surveillance, the prophet of the World Economic Forum.
Social credit system is basically an expansion of money or a new kind of money. You know, when you think about traditional money, gold coins, dollars, even bitcoins, they give value only to specific parts of human reality.
Right.
Some things you do, like you work, you gain money, you want to buy airline ticket, you pay money, but other things you go visit your friends, you go visit your grandmother, even you throw trash in the street. Mm-hmm. This is no monetary value. The idea of the social credit is to monetize everything, to give value to every single thing you do in life. And this is your score.
Mm-hmm.
So even things that traditionally were not about money, they're about reputation or status. Suddenly you get precise points for them. And also anything you want to do, you need to use your social credit for it. So again, it has positive potential in some regards. Mm-hmm. It could create the most totalitarian, again, systems in history,
right,
where anything you do impacts your ability to get a job, to gain a loan,
right,
to travel. And in a way, you see this not only in China, you see it all over the world, also in the US. This, because it's a function of surveillance that traditionally only some areas of life were monitored and surveyed. And even in dictatorships, there was privacy.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in the Soviet Union, so the KGB can't follow you around all the time. They just don't have enough agents.
Right. They tried, but they can't.
They try, but you know, you have 200 million Soviet citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have 200 million agents. Now you can monitor everybody all the time. You don't need human agents or analysts. You have the computers, smartphones, cameras, drones, microphones everywhere, and you have the AIs analyzing all the ocean of information. So this creates the potential for total surveillance. And it can take the form of the social credit system.
And that is exactly what we should be worried about in America right now. You can come back to me. In the meantime, I just want to say this is very dangerous, and I do not believe that this is should be in America. It is antithetical to everything this country stands for. We are already aware that 3 million people after January 6th were surveilled as domestic terrorists. We had Chris Wray and Merrick Garland go ahead and put in an anti-authority, anti-government task force that kicked open the doors of 1,600 Americans, let alone went into raiding, Navarro and Roger Stone and Bannon, and look at what they've done to Alex Jones. I mean, we have to be serious about what we will tolerate in the United States as American citizens, because this is where they are heading, and they are not slowing up. In the meantime, what we did learn also is that there is a lot of work going on at DARPA and at NATO as well. And recently, as you know, RFK Jr. mentioned wearables. But for wearable devices like Apple Watches, Fitbits, to advanced neurotech in gaming and medicine and defense, a great woman, Brandi Smith, told Lara Logan last week, explains how these innovations are transforming lives and potentially could compromise them. The conversation raises urgent concerns about privacy, neurological warfare, ethics of mind-reading technology, because right now we are way past the point of Minority Report. It turns out that it's really highly advanced at this point. They've been doing extensive studies on this for years. As I always say, on my themelkayshow.com resource page, I have the NATO document on cognitive warfare and turning brains into weapons on the individual scale in groups, in nations, and in the world. So if they have all of this technology, which I believe they have had since World War II, and it continues to advance, and then we bring in Palantir and Ellison's building the Skynet, and we have all these interoperable things going on, then we have surveillance under the skin, and again, AI, the threat of AI, it is only the United States of America at this point that can actually push back. But a lot of Americans, because of convenience, aren't even looking at it. They're giving their eye scans, their retina scans. I keep saying, didn't you see Minority Report? He had to cut out his eyes because of his retina scans. Meanwhile, we also are accepting these bracelets and wearables and things that are taking our temperature, our heart rate, all of that, and not even asking where the data is going. We should at least be demanding that we control our data, and if they want to have our data, we should be compensated. But I don't really feel anyone pushing back in America, and it is being sold as convenience, which we all understand. But at the same time, we are not dealing with people that care about, you know, freedom or liberty or any of that sovereignty. They don't want nation states. The people behind this are the same people that are the global partners of the public-private partnership and the international bankers. So why would we think that full surveillance under our skin, as Harari warned, isn't coming? Meanwhile, they are also still talking about the useless people after AI and after they get into their fourth industrial revolution and all of the land is taken over by data centers. Let's listen to Harari about what they're going to do about us useless people when they get it all up and running.
And when you look back in history, people constantly compare the threat of automation and job loss in the 21st century to what happened in the 20th century. In the 20th century, you saw automation in agriculture, so lots of unemployed farm workers moved to working in industry. And then when automation reached the industries, they moved to working as cashiers at Walmart. But in those cases, what happened was that people lost low-skilled jobs and transferred to other low-skilled jobs. Moving from being an agricultural worker to working in some car factory in Detroit, you moved from one low-skilled job to another low-skilled job. When you lost your job at the Detroit car factory and got a new job as a cashier at Walmart, again, you moved from a low-skilled job to a low-skilled job. But the next stage, if the next stage means I'm losing my job at 45 as a cashier at Walmart, and now there is an opening as a software engineer at Google designing virtual worlds, this is going to be much more difficult than moving from the car factory to Walmart. And it's very likely that even if there are new jobs, most of the unemployed masses will not be able to make the transition. It's also a big question about young people that nobody really knows what the job market would be like in 20 or 30 years. It's really the first time in history that nobody has any idea what kind of jobs and what kind of skills people will need in 30 years, which means that we have absolutely no idea what to teach children at school. Most of what they learn is going to be irrelevant to the requirements of the job market and of society in 2050. What to teach them instead, we just don't know. And the worst problem, of course, is not in the developed countries, but in the developing countries. If you think about a country like, I don't know, Sweden, which now gets a lot of attention in the US. So I'm not so worried about the Swedes. I mean, even if millions of jobs are lost in Sweden, I think that because of the tradition of the welfare state and so forth, the Swedish government will raise taxes on the big companies and universal basic income or something like that. The Swedes will be okay, I think. The really big question is what will happen to the Nigerians, to the Bangladeshi, to the Brazilians. If millions of textile workers in Bangladesh lose their jobs because of automation, what will they do? I mean, we are not teaching the children of Bangladesh today to be software engineers. What will they do in 20 or 30 years?
Okay,
and
you
can
really
cut him. Think?
Okay, let's be honest. This is not the future anyone really wants, first of all. Second of all, I'd like to go back to being an agricultural society and having farms thriving all over America instead of abandoned farmland. They want to build all their data centers, which will take so much energy and a ton of water and a ton of natural resources. While we have all of this land that we should be growing, we have all this apparently manufacturing coming back. We should be rebuilding Main Street. We should be doing things that humans do. But when you're an atheist and you don't believe in God and you really believe that automation is the answer and technology is the future and you don't really need to teach children literature or how to read or how to research or how to do anything because it's all going to be AI. I mean, the dystopian future he's talking about would be less disturbing if I didn't see what was going on at the World Economic Forum. I don't think it was an accident that Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump met in Alaska the same day that the World Economic Forum announced that they were having two people rise up to the top, which included Larry Fink of BlackRock and Andre Hoffman. So they are now the co-chairs of the World Economic Forum. This happened the same day Russia is meeting with the U.S. and Trump and they're talking about a new way forward, new cooperation. Larry Fink takes over. Of course, he is right now in Jackson Hole for the parent company that runs the United States of America annual conference. And what I need to say about that is probably that the American people really need to get used to understanding how this affects us globally, because not only is Larry Fink the CEO of the $11 trillion BlackRock that basically owns everything in America, but also at the same time, he is now the top of the World Economic Forum, which is pushing not just Agenda 2030, full track and trace surveillance, the fourth industrial revolution, but it's also where Noah Harari is the top advisor to the top of the technical and human sociological department over there at the World Economic Forum. Do not forget the COVID-19, the Great Reset, that was Klaus Schwab's book. Then, of course, the Great Narrative. They are all in cahoots. They are aligned with the United Nations, the EU, the international bankers. And now Larry Fink has got the top spot. He was pushing the Great Reset. He was pushing the ESG scores. And this week he is telling all of the bankers and the billionaires that run the global public-private partnership that runs the world exactly what they're going to do going forward. He put out a little note here saying the world is more fragmented and complex than ever, but the need for the platform, meaning the World Economic Forum, that brings together business, government, and civil society, that's NGOs to you and me, has never been greater. We believe the forum can serve as a unique catalyst for cooperation, one that fosters trust, identifies shared goals, and turns dialogue into action. Again, he goes on to talk about the stakeholders and what will happen with the stakeholders. And I actually have a first clip here of Larry Fink telling exactly how he does what he does. He calls it forcing behavior. As I told you, before the pandemic hit our shores, it was not only Larry Fink that had his Jackson Hole meeting and talked about going direct, basically skipping governments as always planned and going with corporations and banks directly to the people. And I believe that's what he's talking about in this clip. So please take a look at the new head of the World Economic Forum, the head of BlackRock, the head of many, many projects around the world, Larry Fink. Let's take a look at Larry Fink talking about behavior.
There's some criteria for you.
Well, behaviors are going to have to change, and this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors, and at BlackRock, we are forcing behaviors. 54% of the incoming class are women. We added four more points in terms of diverse employment this year, and what we are doing internally is, if you don't achieve these levels of impact, your compensation could be impacted. Okay,
we're doing the same thing.
And so it's just you have to force behaviors, and if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted. And that's not recruiting, it is development, as Ken said. And ultimately, it's still going to take time, but I am just as much shocked as Ken is that we have not seen more opportunities, and we're going to have to force change.
Okay, well, Larry Fink is going to be forcing change. He's right now in Jackson Hole telling everyone what they're going to do with the new rebranded ESG score, social credit score and all. We will see you after the break and continue on.
There are millions of different knives for sale around the world right now, and there's been probably tens of millions of different designs throughout human history. I don't think anybody knows. But when you go to theolivestonestore.com, you are going to have limited edition select knives that our current military recognizes are the very best for self-defense and will never lie to you and will never fail you and will never jam or run out of ammo or bullets like a gun will. Ladies and gentlemen, we have this limited edition tactical dagger with the hard rubber olive green grip, skull crusher, 1776 on one side of the hilt, by signature on the other. It's collectible. 6-inch razor sharp stainless steel blade and the high tech scabbard. And the clip that goes on your belt. This is an amazing knife. Then you've got this. Only 1,000 of these left. Limited edition. Tip of the spear with the Spartan. The skull crusher. The brass knuckles. This is an updated World War II trench knife. This is all about defending you and your family. Exclusively available at theolivestonestore.com. And then it's the Blades and Bullion sale, our great sponsor at Bigly that keeps us on the air, held back when these coins sold out, just a few hundred of each. So this is the very end of it. You've got the Trump 47 fight, battle for the Republic coin. You got the Spartan tip of the spear coin, the Declaration of Independence, Paul Revere coin, and people asked for it, so we gave it to you. We have the Alex Jones Limited Edition InfoWars coin. All at thealexjonesstore.com, the Blades and Bullion sale, up to 40% off on top of the discounts that are already there, and it keeps us on the air. Take advantage of this right now while you can.
Alex Jones has good genes. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
Okay, and we are back. So let's talk a little bit about what is going on at the parent company of the United States meeting in Jackson Hole today. First and foremost, I believe that we are going to see a rebranding of something we have all been talking about, the ridiculous ESG score that Larry Fink is talking about in the clip before the break, forcing behavior. Of course, it is known as now inclusive capitalism, which is a centralized program that links together governments, bureaucracies, NGOs, billionaire-backed foundations, and international banks and corporations to have one umbrella, basically globalism, multiculturalism, DEI, climate change, all of it is under that umbrella. They call it Agenda 2030. And basically last year, one of the leaders in that, Linda Rothschild, came out and basically said it's not working anymore. Too many people know about the ESG score and DEI, and they're rejecting it. So the Council for Inclusive Capitalism, which is essentially communism, came out and said that they need to rebrand ESG score. So if you're wondering what is going on at that meeting, I suggest that that is probably what's happening. They call it stakeholder capitalism, but what it means is that there is a ruling class, or as the Council of Foreign Relations and Chatham House would call it, the super class, and that, of course, they are the ones that are running the world, and all of us just have to go along with their plans. Of course, this is the Club of Rome, which is a Rockefeller Institute, as is the UN, as is the Council of Foreign Relations and the World Economic Forum. They are all in line with the international banks. And not only that, we have the other head, new head of the World Economic Forum, again, talking about pushing Agenda 2030 into our lives. And don't forget, had Kamala Harris been placed in office, we would be going straight ahead, because the Biden-Harris administration, or whoever was running the auto pen, committed to making sure that the United States achieved Barack Obama's 2015 commitment to have the United States not only achieve Agenda 2030, but reach it. And I firmly believe that the United States of America has been paying for the entire globalist experiment all of these years, particularly since Barack Obama signed that. But let's take a look at the other head of the World Economic Forum right now, who's also in Jackson Hole, Andre Hoffman, talk about Agenda 2030. Go ahead.
I started this platform with my wife some years ago on the principle that we needed to, and we have wrote down the mission on a little panel there, and that we need to accelerate the movement towards a sustainable economy by fostering the Agenda 2030 of the United Nations and calibrating this on the SDG goal, 17 goals. And we do this with the by building bridges between different projects, and I think today is a good example of that, but also by connecting people who don't necessarily know each other, or who are not necessarily aware that they are working in the same direction. So, Anna Meyer said kindly in her introduction, I happen to be one of these rare animals who happens to sit in corporate boards and corporate dissection, but also quite actively involved in NGOs. And I'm completely convinced that business is a force for good, and I'm going to explain that, because sometimes that particular thing needs to be explained. But first, intent. Intent, we try to create these events, which today have to be on the screen, but which normally were in real life, and we hope to be able to resume that very soon. The principle of what we are trying to achieve is to demonstrate that the current system, and the pandemic has shown that very clearly, the current system is not really fit for purpose. As a humanity, we are not respecting the different forces that constitute our system in a reasonable way. In particular, we overconsume natural resources, we abuse social and human systems, and all this in the name of short-term profit maximization.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, he's talking about how NGOs and multinational corporations and banks will be controlling the future as per Agenda 2030. I just want to remind everyone, it is a full track and trace surveillance from birth to death. That is why they want everyone to have a phone, everyone to have internet. All of this is about making sure that we do not use their natural resources, because the way that they see it is they are the parent company of planet Earth. And
I'm coming to defeat you, evil scum. I'll defeat you, globalists.
I've been waiting a long time for this, Alex.
The program that strikes fear into the heart of the elite. It's the war room.
Hello there. I am Mel Kay from The Mel Kay Show, in for Owen Schroyer. I want to talk a little bit more in depth about BlackRock. It does seem that BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street really run this country from above. And frankly, the elevation of Larry Fink at the World Economic Forum is not a surprise, but it is concerning, because the United States of America was never meant to be a corporatocracy or whatever it is right now. And certainly the power that this person has should be more understood, and yet very few people understand BlackRock at all. So I just want you to know, it was established by Larry Fink in 1988. The company positioned itself to have almost total absolute control over key institutions such as the Federal Reserve, Wall Street mega banks, Goldman Sachs, Davos, World Economic Forum, obviously behind the Great Reset. It is also said that Larry Fink met with Joe Biden only a couple days before all of the other candidates that were running in the primary for Democrat in 2020 dropped out, and Joe Biden became the choice. Of course, then multiple people from BlackRock were in his cabinet, including Deese, who was the sustainable development chief over at BlackRock, and multiple other people. Tom Donilon, he was a Institute of Investing for BlackRock. He went in to run the China foreign relations during the Otto Penn presidency. But at the same time, the company amassed huge financial assets, but also software. One notable tool is BlackRock's Aladdin, a risk management system, software that can monitor and analyze trading activities across more than $18 trillion worth of assets of 200 financial institutions, including all of the central banks, including our Federal Reserve and Europe. Basically, then the rest of all of the companies use that to go forward. And of course, they have been fully behind the entire Agenda 2030 from the beginning to the end. The real problem I think that we have here is that BlackRock doesn't seem to have any oversight. As I said, Biden appointed Brian Deese, the director of National Economic Council, for the last 4 years. Of course, he was the head of BlackRock's global sustainable investing. We had Wally Adamo, who was number two to to Janet Yellen, also a BlackRock guy. We had multiple BlackRock people in the back of the Obama administration as well. And as you know, BlackRock and Vanguard seem to be one and the same. They are labeled systematically important financial institutions under the post-2008 Dodd-Frank Act. They vigorously lobbied to successfully ward off any proposition that they were in that group, and BlackRock now operates as its own entity, free from any regulations basically at all. They are now systematically indispensable to the degree only matched by Vanguard, who is reportedly the significant shareholder of BlackRock. So we do have to understand that a lot of the people that are on the world stage right now, including Mertz, Cheryl Mills is on the board of BlackRock. We have George Osborne on the board of BlackRock, the former British Chancellor. This is how they do that. And Philip Hildebrand of Swiss National Bank is on the board. BlackRock Investment, also the Bank of Canada, former head. Also, the emergency bailout plan from the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell back in March 2019. Oh, yeah, that's right. BlackRock did that, too, at a time when financial markets seemed on the verge of experiencing a 2008 Lehman crisis, also known as the consolidation of banking on its way to central bank digital currency. Powell appointed BlackRock without seeking any bids to oversee all the Fed's corporate purchase programs, even those involving bonds in which BlackRock itself had invested. Also, a coalition of 30 NGOs voiced concerns to Chairman Powell, saying that by entrusting BlackRock with the full management of its debt buyout program, the Fed not only enhances BlackRock's systematic importance to the financial system, but it also does so without subjecting BlackRock to regulatory scrutiny that even smaller systematically important financial institutions face. In 2019, the Campaign for Accountability came out and said that BlackRock, the world's premier asset manager, pursued a strategy of lobbying, campaign contributions, and strategic hiring of insiders to stave off governmental regulations, thereby cementing its position as the globe's most influential financial corporation. Of course, at the same time, many people that are watching this have their pensions invested in BlackRock, through BlackRock in the whole world as well. They have a lot of dealings in Mexico and China. So what are we dealing with here in America? A global public-private partnership that runs our country from above that seems to think that going direct using corporations and banks to force behavior is the way forward. The New York Fed engaged BlackRock to oversee its commercial mortgage-backed securities program and its $750 billion primary and secondary corporate bond and ETF purchase with no bid contracts. Again, also, for the first time in history, the Fed, it says here, this came out of Wall Street on Parade blog by Pam and Russ Martins. For the first time in history, the Fed has enlisted BlackRock to go direct and acquire $750 billion in both primary and secondary corporate bonds and bond ETFs, a market in which BlackRock is one of the world's leading suppliers. Adding to that, the BlackRock managed program will be allocated $75 billion of the $454 billion in taxpayer money to absorb the losses on its corporate bond purchases, which will include its own ETFs, which the Fed is permitting it to buy. This is very strange what is going on here, and yet most people in America don't even know who Larry Fink, the World Economic Forum, or BlackRock is. Not to mention BlackRock's relationship with Mexico and the idea that Fink appointed 52-year-old Marcos Antonio Slim Domit, the billionaire son of Mexico's richest man, and Carlos Slim, to BlackRock's board, alongside all the other people. Slim's son was also co-chair of the World Economic Forum's Latin America movement and a young global leader. All of this happening at the same time that we are watching all different scandals unfold with the cartels and in Mexico. In the meantime, I'd like to play a clip recently that Bill Gates and Larry Fink together did an interview talking about the future and what they're doing. And if you ask me, I don't think this has anything to do with nation states, because Agenda 2030 is an end of nation state plan, you know, an open society society. No borders. That is why they wanted to destroy our culture from within. Let's take a look at Bill Gates and Larry Fink together talking about our future that we have no choice in because they'll decide it for us.
And for both of you, you've been partners in this effort to recruit other CEOs. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about the feedback you've gotten, the level of enthusiasm or not. What are people saying? And what can we expect from the two of you in the months ahead? Are you optimistic that you'll be able to bring other leaders, other companies into this project?
Yeah, well, let me start off because Bill has been working behind the scenes for a long time on this. And I've been playing maybe the color coordinator or the backup. Bill has been very instrumental in all these conversations, and I've been able to fill in where the relationships I've had. I've had a few of the partners that I've had some very serious conversations. I believe these companies, but importantly, the companies that have not signed up, but I believe will sign up, understand what we're trying to do. They believe in the science foundation of what Catalyst is. This is not just a venture fund. This is really about using philanthropic money or using capital that would be below market rate capital to try to accelerate a private sector solution alongside the government. And so it's a pretty easy story. The commitments that every firm is making in many cases is a large commitment, and there may be more of that, but I do believe in my conversations, it actually accelerates the conversation within these companies, and in most cases, they're all saying we want to be a part of it.
Yeah, I'd say the private sector engagement in climate versus, say, 2015 at the time of the Paris talks, it's improved dramatically. And so if you step back, you know, no, we don't have the total solution to this incredible problem. But the momentum, both on the rate of innovation and large parts of the private sector saying they have to be part of the solution. These seven are in the vanguard. You know, we hope to get over 20 companies to be key partners in this effort. And I don't think that'll be super hard. Larry's been a huge help.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has. Let's not forget, at this meeting this week, of course, they will be talking about ESG scores. To remind everyone, Fink is the not only now the top of the World Economic Forum, but which is behind the Great Reset and Agenda 2030, but he was the lead in ESG corporate investing. Fink basically pushed it upon everyone, and that is the United Nations Sustainable Economy Initiative that is coming to fruition, and that is what they're talking about, where global banks and global international organizations basically replace the people of our nation in deciding things. It's called the Global Public-Private Partnership, and in public, that is not you. It is not me. It is not anyone watching this show. The public are the people that they fund to get into office, to control us, to push us to what they want, their sustainable economy. Again, they are not on the same level as us, so it doesn't really matter. But basically, companies garner favorable ratings in what they're talking about if they have gender diversity and they reduce their carbon footprint and they have sustainable energy sources all around the United Nations World Economic Forum ideology. Corporations continue to push global sustainable governance, ESG scores, they're renaming them, corporate donations to things like Black Lives Matter and other things, including all the UN agencies, the World Health Organization, the Club of Rome, all talking the same exact language. At the same time, the idea of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and sovereign nation states is completely left out of the conversation, and it will be, I'm sure, this week, and it will be again in Davos. I do not understand, and again, I say, I believe that every American citizen should be asking that the International Organization Immunity Act of 1947 is rescinded, and that we stop playing this game with these international organizations, or the idea that we never fought a war to be a sovereign nation called the United States of America that is not beholden to international organizations, and get the international banks along with the Fed out of our country, pull out of NATO. This is all insane. They have looted and lied to the United States populace for decades, particularly between 1944 and 1954 when they set up this whole globalist scam. And frankly, I believe that trillions of dollars of the U.S. Taxpayer money has been going through USAID and the World Bank and other things to fund this entire globalist operation and everything that they're doing around the world. Why are we $36 trillion in debt? Well, I believe that the U.S. taxpayers have been paying not just for endless wars, but for every single thing that they're talking about at the United Nations, certainly the World Health Organization, NATO, UNESCO. They can't survive without us, and yet we keep playing along with this nonsense. We have a constitution, a Bill of Rights, and a country that is supposed to be by the people, for the people, not for Bill Gates and Larry Fink and the old mentality of David Rockefeller, where bankers and billionaires are surely the preferable people to run the country than auto-determination of the populace. No, that's not true, and we have to stop playing along with it. In the meantime, BlackRock is investing in our grid. So they've spent $12.5 billion to acquire global infrastructure partners with $100 billion in infrastructure assets. Their next target is going to be worth $100 billion, nearly 10 times bigger than their first acquisition. And these are all about taking over the grid and utilities countrywide. So basically, when you own these wires and substations and supply power, you control energy. And then all these data centers that they're building and carbon capture. So basically, what we are dealing with is that California's average price right now, you know, is something. But in a little while, they're going to decide it. It's not going to be the state deciding it because these are all looking like they're going to go private. And in the meantime, private equity, both BlackRock and Blackstone have entered not just the U.S. electricity market, but we know also the housing market. And we are at a point where they have acquired Minnesota Utility Company for $6 billion, serving 100,000 people. And Blackstone is buying a New Mexico company serving 800,000 people for $11 billion, both utilities markets. So it might not matter every day to everyone what they are doing, but it certainly should matter to those of us that still believe in privacy, liberty, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the sovereign nation of the United States. I mean, every single thing that is happening here is moving towards what has always been the goal, which is a global one world government, as told to us by, of course, George H.W. Bush, which I would like to remind everyone that this has never stopped. It has only grown. And then there is, of course, the Rockefeller Institute, the Carnegie Institute, the Ford Foundation, and all the other NGOs, Open Society, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, all of these run by a model I call the Rockefeller model. So they create tons of NGOs, which they call civil society, that align with the international banks because they're the ones funding it, and the foundations, they're the ones funding that too. None of them pay taxes, and then they co-opt our entire country with all kinds of no-bid contracts everywhere, and before you know it, we're in the fourth industrial revolution, a totalitarian, technocratic, full track and trace surveillance world that I don't believe any American citizen that is a true lover of this country, the liberty that we are granted, the inalienable rights, want. But if we sit back and wait, that is going to happen, and we have to, no matter what, even if you love Donald Trump or hate Donald Trump, it's got nothing to do with him. It's got to do with what are you willing to stand for, and where does it stop? Because you have to do it in your backyard. Everything that they're talking about is in your backyard. People say, oh, you know, D.C. or Wall Street or whatever. Every one of these things, this full surveillance, the violations of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the over policing, everything that's going on at our borders everywhere, this is in your backyards. You can investigate where the UN or the World Economic Forum or any of these NGOs are in your community. Who is getting your taxpayer money? Where is the data they're collecting on your smart meters or from your children at school going? This is all going to some kind of global public infrastructure. And if we don't start asking the right questions and demanding answers and knowing where the Constitution stands with their fourth industrial revolution, then we're not going to be able to stand anywhere anymore that they don't allow us to. Speaking of that, I want to move on briefly. I don't know if everyone caught this story yet, but it is heating up, and I believe that there will be indictments in COVID, and I know that a lot of people are waiting for that. But what has come out now from a senior American intelligence officials is truly disturbing beyond comprehension. Not that we didn't know, but let's just say that now we have true evidence that not only did the intelligence community, and it looks like the CIA, cover up the COVID-19 leak from the lab, but that Anthony Fauci and his inner circle knew exactly what happened from day one. Evidence is pointing to a lab leak included in signals intelligence collected from the Chinese Communist Party leaders in 2019 between Beijing and Wuhan, revealing a major emergency very early, 2 months before they told Donald Trump. So it looks like the political deep state concealed information from Donald Trump, though they knew from signals intelligence from the CCP that there was a major medical emergency and a leak from that lab. During the first 2 months of the pandemic, nobody told him, including Anthony Fauci, deflecting blame from China as political rival Joe Biden sought to lay responsibility for the entire pandemic on Trump's shoulders, which is why I continue to say we need to look into the Transition Integrity Project again with a fine-tooth comb. That would be Rosa Brooks and Michael Steele and John Podesta that gamed out how Trump might win the election in 2020 and work backwards, because this does not look like not only is it a plandemic, but it looks like for 2 months they knew that it was and did nothing about it to help Joe Biden or whoever the Democratic candidate was at that time. It seems a little early to know that it was Joe Biden, but at this point you have to question everything. Anyway, it says higher-ups continued to dismiss evidence for the lab leak, saying that it was a conspiracy theory when they knew full well that it was not. Frankly, they deceived millions of Americans about the disease that upended their lives and befell their loved ones. The spies that are scientists at four intelligence agencies and four other government officials spoke to the Daily Caller News Foundation on condition of anonymity to reveal previously unreported details about censored intelligence under two presidential administrations. They also decoded engineering in the COVID-19 genome, clues Chinese authorities were powerless to hide, two spy scientists said. But the evidence was conspicuously omitted from public reports released by the intelligence community under then-president, also Joe Biden, as senior officials instead elevated the analysis of Anthony Fauci and his inner circle, who argued the virus was assuredly natural. The omission prompted a formal complaint from one agency, a spy said. Tulsi Gabbard told the Daily Caller she would hold intelligence community accountable by working with whistleblowers, reviewing classified materials, and investigating where taxpayer funds may have helped create the COVID-19 virus. She went on to say it's clear that dissenting views were likely silenced to support Joe Biden's administration's preferred narrative and to hurt Donald Trump. Under President Trump's maximum transparency agenda, we're committed to exposing the truth so we can build back trust in the intelligence community. It appears that the CIA was also very involved in this, and we have to take note because we have to start looking at exactly who and what the CIA is, who and what it works for, and why they were so involved in not only the Russia hoax, but also the COVID hoax, and the COVID plandemic, as we call it here. It is clear also that CIA Director John Ratcliffe, a longtime critic of politicization of intelligence, knew about the origins of COVID that he witnessed in DNI, as DNI in Trump's first term, and that he will hold people accountable as well. He has declassified information and will continue to update assessment with intelligence about science and everything that was hidden about the pandemic. Not only has Director Ratcliffe delivered the vital truth about COVID origins to the American people, but will root out the politicization of intelligence and hold the people behind the plandemic accountable. Well, let's hope so, because so many people out there have suffered. Many people are still asking questions. And beyond that, we also have found out that many people out there have been trying to get the insurance information and also the hospital records of loved ones that died in hospitals during COVID. This has become increasingly difficult, and I know that RFK and others are working, including looking into what was going on with the VARS schedule and everything else. But we are at a place where the American people have had it, and we want some answers, and more is coming out. But it does look like the pandemic was, in fact, an operation, again, on a global scale. And the CIA was actually not little involved, but it looks like very involved. And we need to find out where that began and ended. And it looks like we will be finding that out soon, according to Tulsi Gabbard's spokespeople. At the same time, we are having a lot of questions about science in general. There are now suggestions that we redefine death. So I guess the whole science and military-industrial complex that creates bioweapons and has been poisoning this country is having a reckoning. But all of us need to stay on top of it and make sure that we do not back down and continue to push for transparency. I'll see you on the other side.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue and the ultimate CMOS on a monthly basis. Take 5-year supplements. It's been helping me out for the last 3 years, lost 22 pounds. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I was honestly in the chat on Rumble, bashing, like, getting sick of Alex plugging it. But I tell you what, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I feel I actually subscribe monthly now to it. And I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I was so bad with the MS. I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue is able to get everything that you're taking, all your antibiotics or whatever medicines you're taking, supplements. And what it does, it helps to cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. Methylene blue will help things push it through to where it needs to go. I was at my store, and I keep the TV on in my store of InfoWars, and I heard Alex Jones talking about methylene blue. Well, right away, my ears perked up because I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I ordered 2 bottles of it because you had buy one, get one free. So I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing. I take the capsules twice. I take 2 of those a day.
And you're saying with the methylene blue, you're taking it with ivermectin, and you're using our methylene blue, and it's kept you regress, but now you're taking this, and you're back to being normal, or what's your level at?
I'm
right
walking.
Now? Okay.
No, I'm. You know, I own a jewelry store, and I'm able to. Don't get me wrong. I have bad days.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane.
Okay.
And the bad days that I may have, maybe like once every couple weeks. But I'm able to speak properly where my everything was lagging with me.
Right.
The lesions were showing very bright in my brain. And when I started on the methylene blue, which I couldn't take the liquid. I bought the liquid, but I just couldn't get it down. And I was trying to find like a concoction.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the pills came out. So I ordered the pills. I take 2 of those a day. I've been taking that with everything else, with the ivermectin. I take 1 pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Well, that is great to hear. You know,
talk to you.
Because, you know, I'm glad to hear that. That really makes me feel good for, you know, the products that we offer to people. And, you know, the methylene blue, it really has been a game changer around here in terms of people getting it and seeing effects immediately, being able to acquire that quality of life they want. And that's really great to hear.
I will put money on it. Like I said, I used to have to pay $10,000 a week to get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take 2 pills or drink it once a day and pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it?
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Well,
thank
you.
And me having it.
Thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for helping your family too, because, you know, sometimes people, they don't want to tell their family. They don't want to say anything because then, oh, you're supposed to mind your own business and not tell people about health. That's a doctor's job, you know, but no, it is our job to tell our families, hey, this is what I found out. This is what I found that works. Why don't you try it?
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Well, I'm a tin foil hat wearing meat eating son of a gun, loving sun, loving hot blooded Texian, two stepping outlaw 3-1, looking for a little fun.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things, not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com. You just saw an ad for methylene blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some methylene blue about a half hour before. Gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before I work my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at thealexjonesstore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the methylene blue, bare minimum, thealexjonesstore.com.
Persia is moving up in the world. And along with it has come a new freedom of expression.
Tehran is a modern city, visibly leaning more west than east.
The miniskirt is here. And along with it has come a new freedom of expression.
Okay, guys, I'm back. It is Mel Kay from the Mel Kay Show in for Owen Schroyer. If you weren't mad already by what I just told you, I got something else that is really disturbing. What we are finding out now about it's just the level. It was just a crime scene in D.C. over the last 4 years. It's hard to believe every time you turn around, we were lied to about something else. Now there are D-class emails from the Environmental Protection Agency showing that the agency sought to discredit any independent scientists who questioned official data on the contamination following the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment and fire in February of 2023. It turns out that following the official EPA announcement that there were no dangerous levels of toxins in the area and that it was safe for residents to return home. Independent testing experts reported findings of high levels of dioxins in the soil in East Palestine, of course. According to News Nation, the findings were reported in spring of 2023. Former EPA Administrator Judith Enck said the agency should pay attention to the results. Instead of taking new samples and doing similar testing, leaked emails show that the EPA began collecting Smith's personal information and monitoring his actions in an effort to discredit the environmental scientists that came up with this information. Frankly, it goes on to say that his personal information whereabouts were distributed to more than 50 EPA employees. His dog's picture was circulated and drones were documented hovering near the scientists on multiple occasions. Many other people said that that was happening to them as well, including Andrew Huff, who was a whistleblower on COVID. Leslie Pacey with the Government Accountability Center said that the EPA's response was troubling, you think, since it is a matter of public health. So it says, what the EPA seems to have done in East Palestine is that they were more interested in controlling the narrative and controlling what was going on in the community than protecting the people of the community from anything that might harm them. They were definitely controlling the narrative of nothing to see here, no long-term impacts, just move on. It turns out that the researcher, Mr. Smith, he had been to East Palestine more than 30 times, said that it was money was spent on surveilling him, would have been better spent on testing the soil and the water for toxins from the train cars burned. concern. He said they don't want to look for full spectrum of chemicals that I look for. And instead of sitting down with me and having a dialogue for the benefit of the community, they launched a smear campaign. They're clearly not serving the community they're supposed to protect. And it's not just East Palestine. It's a systematic thing. Smith recently met with RFK Jr. to discuss what happened in that case. That's bad. You know, that's really, really disturbing on a major scale, but it only gets worse from there, folks. Whatever has been going on, and we have to hold all these people accountable. Apparently today, 600 people were fired by RFK Jr., which, likely is not enough, because now we have, declassification of a Biden HHS organ transplant report. Systematic disregard for sanctity of life is the least of what I would say about this. So, basically, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services initiated reforms of the country's organ transplant system after a study of more major organ procurement organization revealed disturbing practices that the HHS characterized as a systematic disregard for the sanctity of life. The press release says hospitals allowed the organ procurement process to begin when patients showed signs of life. And this is horrifying, said Kennedy. The entire system must be fixed to ensure that every potential donor's life is treated with the sanctity it deserves. It appears that the review that federally funded organ procurement organization, which serves Kentucky, Southwest Ohio, and West Virginia, found clear negligence in examining 351 cases in which organ donors were authorized but ultimately not completed. 103 were concerning. 73 patients demonstrated neurological signs incompatible with organ donation, meaning they had high or improving levels of consciousness. At least 28 people may not have been deceased when organ procurement began. Almost all the patients eventually died, but there were serious ethical and legal questions that came up. It turns out that this was a pattern of rushed decision-making that prioritized the need for more organs over the safety of potential donors. Just last week, the New York Times put out an op-ed that we should redefine death about this same topic. The New York Times article said that people across the nation have endured rushed or premature attempts to remove their organs as some were gasping, crying, or showing other signs of life. In these new documents, the horror stories are even worse than that and talk about an unconscious man waking up while they're trying to take out his organs, and that's not the only one. It turns out that this is about the situation that people are getting, it looks like, a financial benefits to have organ transplants move forward. So it says here, 2020, HHS released a new policy of guidelines that grade organ procurement organizations on the number of organs they procure from eligible donors in its donation service area. Those that underperform will potentially be unable to renew contracts going forward. So it looks like that it says here in the journal, there are compelling reasons for calling into question compliance of current practices of transplantation, especially when it is pushing for more organs in time to in order to stay involved in the program. That can really only happen in a country that is completely captured. It is certainly not the country that we know in the United States. And unfortunately, under the O'Biden AutoPen administration, nothing was what it seems. And it even gets worse from there. As you know, last week, the infiltrated, as all of the medical and legal institutions are, Academy of Pediatrics, American Academy of Pediatrics, it turns out, was recommending vaccines from their biggest supporters. And not just that, as you know, last week, the American Academy of Pediatrics said that they should not accept any religious exemptions for any of the vaccines that they recommend for children. These are not the vaccines recommended by the CDC, as it's supposed to be, but it's by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Basically, the American Academy of Pediatrics is working with four of its donors, including Merck, Moderna, Pfizer, and Sanofi, And that they are the corporate donors and friends of the Child Fund at the American Academy of Pediatrics. At the same time RFK Jr. is trying to look into vaccines, he noted that make virtually every vaccine on the CDC recommended childhood vaccine schedule mandatory is what they are trying to push right now. In the meantime, he is saying that that is not even in line with the CDC practices. As I told you before, many people have been fired and will continue to be fired, but we do need to keep an eye on all of the institutions. We have a situation. I think we're on a break. Are we on a break? No? Okay. Oh, we are still here. Okay. But we have a situation right now where there is a question also, RFK Jr. is putting out for public comment about pharmaceutical ads on television, which of course, makes the media and those reporting on the pharmaceutical companies, compromised. So in the meantime, we need to keep pushing that we want ads off TV and all disclosure about these odd relationships that should not be happening. Kennedy accused them of going against the CDC for eradicating corporate influence in decisions over vaccine recommendations. He referred the dismissal of all 17 previous members of the CDC's top vaccine advisory panel due to finding that they were routinely advising on products from pharmaceutical firms with which they had financial ties, and it has been an issue of conflict of interest for a very long time. The CDC vaccine schedule so far remains mostly the same since the appointment of 8 new members, but they are going through it, and this academy really should be looked at, as all of them should, because these groups, including the American Medical Association, American Psychiatric Association, American Pediatric Association, all of these people have gone completely woke. If you go look at their websites, it will blow your mind, and I suggest everyone do that for themselves. In the meantime, not to be outdone, the leftist billionaire oligarchs that fund all the left-wing, it's not even left-wing, it's not. It's progressive, it's globalist, it's the globalist oligarch billionaires that are running the controlled demolition of America, frankly. Well, there is a new group you should know about. They call themselves the Department of Class Solidarity. This is a important article from the Forward Observer. An emerging left-wing activist group, of course, has launched a project to audit and track over 1,000 billionaires in the United States of America. Their stated goal is not financial transparency, but political warfare, to document billionaires' ties to President Trump and then equip activists with tools to, in their words, defeat them. The group recently published its first 5 audits of high-profile billionaires connected to Donald Trump, including Elon Musk, Palantir, Alex Karp, Department Doge, Antonio Gracias, Silicon Valley, it's all Silicon Valley guys, also including Peter Thiel and Jeff Bezos. They have put up wanted posters around the country, stylized as, wanted for crimes. They have put out their statement, the Department of Class Solidarity arms organizers, activists, and everyday people with tools to expose the billionaire ransacking of our democracy. Welcome to the war room for the working class. What does that sound like, communists? There are nearly 1,000 billionaires in the United States. We're ordering every single one of them to arm the working people with the knowledge we need to defeat them. In fact, on their wacko website called the Department of Class Solidarity, classsolidarity.org, they actually put every single one of these people's names. They put a whole thing on all of them, where they live and all kinds of stuff. This should not be allowed in America. It is literally domestic terrorism, if you ask me. Many of these people are the people that fund our country in general, but they are going after basically all these people, but it also includes Mark Zuckerberg, it includes Larry Ellison, Bill Gates, Alice Walton, basically Jeffrey Hildebrandt, Trevor Reese Jones. All of these people should be looking into who is funding this. Apparently, when I looked into this, the Department of Class Solidarity, it turns out, is aligned with the Solidarity Center. Get this. Guess who funds the Solidarity Center? Not a surprise to my audience at all, I'm sure, but that would be the AFL-CIO and other unions, also the U.S. government. So the Solidarity Center's funding sources, the organizations receiving the majority of funding is from the U.S. government grants, particularly the USAID. This is funding it, and the National Endowment for Democracy. Surprise, surprise. The Solidarity Center also received grants directly from the U.S. Department of Labor. The Department of Labor awarded it $6 million in November 2023 for unionized efforts in Indonesia and the Philippines. The search also says that the Solidarity Center funding also, and in 2024, to help significant cuts in its in funding of different groups around other countries, including Chile and Brazil. So this Solidarity Center is out there making lists and threatening people. They also have media and a whole take action list. Mind you, they are also, there's also a group that is planning to invade the Hamptons. So I guess the billionaire oligarchs that are globalists that run the world that all live in the Hamptons better prepare themselves, because there is a big march on August 31st planned in the Hamptons to take down the billionaires. And it looks like the Department of Class Solidarity will be involved in those actions as well. So I would tell the people in the Hamptons to be prepared, because they are coming to your town and they are planning, even with buses and ways to get there. In the meantime, the Forward Observer put out a color revolution, a strategic assessment between 2025 and 2028 after reviewing a lot of these documents of these different groups. And frankly, it says that, as you know, a color revolution in their definition is a coordinated campaign to force political change, revolution, regime change, by mobilizing mass protests, undermining government legitimacy, authority, and capacity, and persuading citizens, elites, and institutions to withdraw their support from the government, often backed by foreign funding, media, and training. The anti-Trump resistance has adopted a protest resistance revolution strategy that they have mapped out between 2026 and 2028 presidential election. Basically, they are saying, you are here now, phase one. We are, it's relatively low risk with demonstrations, symbols of power, small uprisings, threat to the government, gauging popular support, and moving on to larger demonstrations. But they do believe that they have a full plan. It is, frankly, is laid out. You can go to forwardobserver.com, and it says that the plan for 2025 to 2026, after support and legitimacy are gained through symbolic protest, an organized resistance movement can begin engaging in selective political defiance. These actions include civil disobedience, such as sit-ins, occupations, boycotts, sustainable disruptive demonstrations that garner media attention, build support, and cause embarrassment for authorities, often leading to government overreaction, which is what they hope for, to reinforce their color revolution narrative of active resistance and building legitimacy for their groups. They lay out, they believe between 2027 and 2028, selective resistance achieves active support. It will be a substantial portion of society. They hope 15 to 30% is what the these radical leftists or progressives or whatever they are hoping for. Now, again, this has to bring you back to what Rich Higgins memo. It is on the website of themelkayshow.com under resources, talking about the red-green access. So right now we have the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE connected with the communists and the Marxists and the socialists and the Democrat Socialists of America. And now they are also being funded by foreign countries. So we have this whole thing erupting, and you can go look at that. But we do have to start to discuss how the United States of America will be dealing with this. We just found out that we have 55 million visa holders in this country, and that's adding to the 20 million that Joe Biden's AutoPen presidency led into the border. That's a quarter of the people in the United States of America are not American citizens. In the meantime, this is all ramping up all over the country, and even worse, they have events coming up called Take Action, People vs. Billionaires. So the week of 8/21 to 8/27 is a week of action and organization. Their partners are Purge Palantir, the Tesla Takedown, Mayday Strong, and Stop Billionaires. So as I said, this is going to be escalating if we do not get in front of it. They go on to say that they want to have a full revolution in America by 2028 to make sure that they have a full revolution. The active campaign to oust leaders from power is not a foregone conclusion. Historically, it's failed. But in their documents, they plan on a full and complete overthrow of the United States of America government. So this is not left and right. This is not Republican and Democrat. This is much more like the communist Bolshevik revolution. And if that's not bad enough, folks, we have a growing group connected to the Revolutionary Communist International that just had a big event. They claim to have presence in 70 countries, and they claim right now to have 2.5 million members in the United States of America. And I have a pretty terrifying video for you from a Dallas event of this group of the Revolutionary Communists of International. If you could play that video, I think it will really open some eyes of the communist meeting that they had.
Leon Trotsky, the organizer of the insurrection, he said that 2 years before, just 2 years before 1917, the czarist military officers, the imperial officers, this is a quote, he said, they thought that the moderate liberals were extreme revolutionaries. Well, the Bolsheviks, in their eyes, belong to the fourth dimension. I think we belong to the fourth dimension for the Republicans that are talking about communism being the Democratic Party. We'll show them the real communists. Now, I'm not going to get into the weeds about how exactly a transfer of power could take place, but we did see a glimpse of revolutionary potential in this country in the summer of 2020. Let's imagine another scenario like the upsurge of the George Floyd movement, where millions and millions of people are pouring into the streets from coast to coast. But instead of a spontaneous uprising, we're talking about an organized uprising, a coordinated general strike action that has units of workers that have been preparing for it in every industry and every workplace, that are organized as units preparing to do something more than just paralyze industry, to do something more than just bring society to a halt. You have strike committees, workers' councils prepared in advance. Now, I've heard comrades ask, what could it look like? And again, we don't know exactly how these things are going to play out, but I don't think it's hard to picture. I mean, we saw the drama in Congress this week where after a lot of intense debate, there's a formal announcement that says the office of the Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant. Well, with a victorious transfer of power, I think we can make a similar announcement when it comes out. It'll be a shorter one. It'll be a shorter one. The United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Yep. Well, that was, of course, from Dr. Carlin B., and you can follow her on Substack. She gets behind the scenes on all of that. That was actually in New York, 2023. And what I do have to tell you is that this is not a left and right, Republican, Democrat, black, white, gay, straight. None of the above, folks. None of the above. We are being destroyed from within, a controlled demolition of the United States of America. And what I want to tell you is that this is all part of a long game. You know, Donald Trump, or even you could say this about Alex Jones or Steve Bannon, or Roger Stone or Navarro or any of these people, they're not after me, they're after you, and I'm in the way. But really, the truth is they're not after America, they're after the world, and America is in the way. But not if we, the people, do not start acting like the Constitution and Bill of Rights are ours, and that we live them, and we go towards liberty, and we fight back against overreach and surveillance and the manipulation and what is going on in cyberspace. The people of the United States still have the power to push back against this, and what these people want, these globalists are funding all of this. Every single one of these movements is being funded by the same globalist billionaire oligarchs that are running the controlled demolition of the United States in hopes of getting the global public-private partnership Agenda 2030 on the whole global stage, being controlled by, I guess, Brussels and Geneva and Wall Street and then probably mainly the city of London. But listen, we are under danger in America and we need to unite. This is not left and right. It is just not real. That does not exist. Right now it is for liberty, freedom, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and auto-determination. Please, please, stand up, speak up, become a leader in your community. you have to be the one that is Paul Revere in your sphere of influence. We need to say enough is enough.
Just got in my Methylene Blue, Ultra Methylene Blue, USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm really interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm going to mix this up. And excited to see how this is going to work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of, hopefully, of what is the unlimited power.
What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving you all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the Ultramethylene Blue USB grade from the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems lax, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take a, you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, you'll need to go to the thealexjonesstore.com and get your Methylene Blue today.
Shadows, one man brings the light. Your host, Owen Schroyer.
The hell's going on? Clean it up.
You've heard him bloviate on TV, interviews, and social media, but never before have all his failures been brought together in one collection.
We all need to self-medicate periodically.
The people that brought you Biden's blunders and Kamala's cackles now proudly present Gavin Newsom's greatest hits.
This whole damn border debate is made up. It's made up.
And who could forget?
Well, finally, California is going to get it right with this new high-speed rail.
Timeless classics.
If we can just get everybody vaccinated that's not vaccinated, that's refusing to get vaccinated, that's living vaccine-free and impacting the rest of us. It's like drunk drivers.
And cliches.
These are organized gangs of people that are coming out. And forgive me for saying gangs. I know that's not a pejorative. Organized groups of folks.
Everyone's favorite.
Deeply sorry about that. I've hurt someone I care deeply about, Alex Turk, his friends and family.
Platitudes.
I thought I was dumb.
I mean, look like a third world country.
We haven't been looking that good in the last few decades in the state.
And failures like...
And that's why we established this framework, what we call a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness in San Francisco.
Order Gavin Newsom's greatest hits by calling 1-916-445-2841. Gavin Newsom's greatest hits, not available in stores. Please allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. Money back guarantee. Please, for the love of God, keep this guy out of the White House.
Now that's funny. I believe Kevin Dalton, the name of the creator there. That is funny stuff. No, I don't think he's getting anywhere near the White House. He'll run, but I don't even know if Democrats will want him. He'll get the wine mom vote, and that's probably about it. Now, you've had Spencer Pratt, who has just been on the political warpath against Newsom after his house burned to the ground. Now, he's selling merchandise that says Spencer for governor. I don't think he's actually running. I mean, I haven't seen an announcement. So I don't know if this is just a merchandise campaign. But I'll tell you what, that would be fun. That would be fun. And it would kind of put us into this new political era that Trump really introduced
which is you can run for office now and you don't have to be a political wonk. You don't even have to really have any political experience. You just have to have to, you just have to have a message and a following. And that's really what you can do now. So I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's an actual thing he's planning on doing. That'd be fun though. I think that would be fun. All right. One more thing here. So, yeah, the food stamp recipients are getting some bad news here that they're getting cut off. Well, this is not really a promising thing to hear here. This was the situation. This was the situation in clip 10.
You know what I'm sick of? I'm sick of the food stamp office, okay? Okay, hang on. Before I get myself worked up, I just came here to talk about how I went from literally $1,700 in food stamps for a family of three, okay? I don't work. I stay home every day. I'm not able to work, so I should be getting the maximum amount.
Really?
Especially because he needs cereal, chips, pop. He needs all that. And I need my energy drink. So I'm not going to have this taking me down from that much. And they took me all the way down to $120, which they didn't even tell me why. I just got this
still
notice
more than
in
you
here because
get.
They were cutting me back on food stamps.
Yep.
So now I'm really going to have to cut back on everything. He's not going to be able to have his pop no more.
It's not our
He's
problem.
He's not going to be able to have his cereal every day
all
for
right.
breakfast.
So look, I hate to be cold about this, but it's just the facts. Sometimes you got to be cold. I'm sorry, but that's nobody's responsibility but the parents of the kid. But you see the mindset here, and I'm telling you, it's like a mental disorder. She's like, oh, what happened? How am I supposed to care? They literally think this stuff just comes out of nowhere. They think they're entitled to this stuff.
InfoWars in outer space.
In the not-so-distant future, Earth's last drop of methylene blue is about to vanish, and the fate of humanity hangs in the balance. Captain Alex Jones and his alien crew blast off with turbo force in the InfoWarrior spaceship, chasing a legend, Planet X2, said to hold the purest methylene blue in the galaxy. Through asteroid fields and cosmic storms, they press on until at last the glowing blue world appears. They descend through the atmosphere, finding towering blue crystals and shimmering methylene blue ponds. Filling their jars to the brim, the crew turns for home. Their mission is clear. Return to Earth and save humanity. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Making talk radio great again. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Listen to that. I almost don't even blame that lady. I mean, it's not like I'm totally cold-hearted. I mean, politically, yeah, sometimes I am. Like, no, the government doesn't owe you anything. The American taxpayer doesn't owe you anything. You're entitled to nothing. But you almost kind of sense it like she really doesn't get it. It's beyond entitlement. It's like she doesn't even know. It's like, what do? I'm not getting free money. What? I thought it's just free money. I thought I just get free money. I thought somebody else made sure that my kids were taken care of. It's not my job. You can almost hear the cognitive dissonance in her voice. So it's like, hey, I can sit here and say, oh, I'm sorry you're in a situation or whatever the case is. But no, you're not entitled to anything. And they don't get it. They really think that they're somehow just entitled to free stuff. And then once it gets cut off, they're like, what? This is even possible? So this is some people are in for a rude awakening, and I'm not even just talking about financially. I mean, like, welcome to the real world. Stuff isn't free, and you're entitled to nothing. And no, it's not the taxpayer's job to make sure that your kid gets cereal and pop. Just not. Now, all right, let's start getting all these headlines off the desk. This is about to be a big story. I'm trying to get a representative from New Jersey on dealing with this, but it's not just going to be New Jersey. New Jersey residents' fury over soaring energy bills could hit Democrats in 2026 election. New analysis makes dark prediction on the future of U.S. energy costs. These states would be the most concerned. It's mostly the Democrat-run states. So here's what we're up against. And this is why, and I don't know if this was a mistake or a mismeasurement or things didn't go right, but the Trump administration has really put the cart before the horse with its current policies on AI and on the economy. Meaning, we don't have the energy for the data processing and for the AI right now. We just do not have it. It just doesn't exist. And if they go forward with this, then energy costs are going to skyrocket, or you're going to start seeing rolling blackouts. It's just inevitable. Now, specifically to this issue, you have these Democrat states like New Jersey, California, others, where they've already signed these bills that have put timestamps on energy saying in this year or in that year, we're going to 50% wind or 50% solar. We're getting off coal. We're getting off natural gas. And they've already signed these things into law. But what's the problem? They don't have the energy. It's not there. So they're either going to have to go, they're going to have to either act quickly and get back to coal and natural gas, or if they try to go into solar and wind and these green energy companies that they've already signed the laws with, you either will not have the energy or you're going to start seeing your energy costs skyrocket. Now, it's already happened in a lot of these states. It's already happening in these Democrat states badly. It's really happening across the nation. So this is about to be a chickens coming home to roost moment. The whole green energy scam is about to start hitting the pocketbooks hard. Hard. Folks. And the Trump administration needs to get out in front of this, because this is not going to be good for the economy, and it's not going to be good for the Trump agenda. It's going to be a disaster. So if I'm the administration, and this is really into Chris Wright, I think he's the energy secretary. I believe it's Chris Wright, guys. Double check me on that. He needs to be in the Oval Office saying, Mr. President, we kind of have a red alert here. We already don't have the energy to support what we're trying to do with this economy and with the AI and the data processing and the manufacturing. Chris Wright, thank you, guys. Mr. President, we have an emergency. We don't have the energy. Now, we can get the energy. We have access to energy, but you need to do something. We gotta ramp up coal now. Like, not tomorrow, yesterday, now. And these states where they've signed laws flipping the energy grid, by the way, they did the same thing in Texas to a smaller degree. And then we had the ice storm 4 years ago, and you had blackouts for like a month because they were trying to get energy from the wind and the sun, and it wasn't there. And they said, oh, it's climate change. No, no, no. You turned off the energy. You literally turned it off. So these states where these laws are about to go into effect, I'm not talking about policy. Policy can change. These are laws. They have put laws on the books that set up the energy grid for total failure. Even if they had the energy from wind and solar, even if they had it, it couldn't power everything and your bill would go up. They don't even have it, folks. The energy is not even there. And so states like California and states like New Jersey, it's about to hit them.
and it's about to hit them hard. Now, it's very likely, no matter where you're at, you're listening to this, your energy bill has probably skyrocketed in the last 5 years, and it's not come back down. So if I'm President Trump, and I know he's got a big thing coming up with Putin this Friday, and they just announced they're going to have a second meeting, which looks good as far as getting a peace deal done. So I'd say that's good signs. I wouldn't be too thrilled about what the final result is going to end up being. I think a lot of people are going to have to make some compromises, including us. Like, who knows if we'll ever be able to recoup that $350 billion we lost over there, but it looks like that's a sign that there's probably going to be a deal made. So that's good, but it's like, hey, we're about to have an energy crisis here. That is a serious issue, an energy crisis. We don't have the energy for the manufacturing and the AI and the data processing. It just doesn't exist. And now that they're flipping on to all this green stuff, now you have a bigger problem. So this is kind of a red alert here, and I would imagine because they're talking about, oh, this is going to hit the Democrats in 2026. Okay, well, that's nice as a political issue. How about the fact that your energy bill is about to skyrocket in 2 years if they don't reverse this? I mean, this is like emergency alert. Forget about trying to figure out how you're going to power the new manufacturing data processing AI. How are you going to make energy affordable for Americans in a couple years once all the Green New Deal crap starts kicking in at the state level? This is bad. Chris Wright and Trump really need to get a round table on this deal, and they really need to start putting pressure on these states, and they need to say, hey, look, you got to go back to coal. You have to. We gotta do something with coal here, and we gotta do it fast. Immediately. And, I mean, look, you don't have the big coal lobbyists up there. You don't have people in the coal industry in there every day with Trump, like the big tech people. So it's always buying access, but like, this is extremely important. So I would imagine it becomes a political issue really soon, but if they don't act on this fast, it's going to become a economy issue is what it's going to become, because Americans are going to see their energy bill skyrocketing. They're not seeing it go down. So the Trump administration needs to really pivot here and put a full force and motion behind U.S. energy. And so, yeah, that's drill, baby, drill, but that's coal, that's natural gas, and that's really putting it to rest, this whole green new energy deal. You got to kill it. It's a disaster waiting to happen. And so you could sit here and think, well, they could let it happen and then blame it on the Democrats and let them eat it and then really stop that forever. But now you're playing with fire now, because you know people aren't that bright. You know that people aren't that bright, and they'll pin that on you, and they'll say energy costs are going up because of Trump. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. They'll blame it on you, and people will believe it. So I'd say emergency, emergency, emergency. President Trump and Chris Wright, you need to turn on the coal industry fast. Because you can get that going pretty quick. You know, drilling and natural gas, there's probably a little bit more of a process. And they got other issues with that. But the coal, it's like, that's ready to go. You can inject into the coal industry, you can stimulate the coal industry, and you can turn that on, and we can get that cranking fast. And it's got to happen. I mean, it's got to happen. And then, really, you have to start pressuring these AI companies, and you have to start telling them, you know, you're going to have to build a nuclear plant to power your stuff. You have to do it. Or you can build it on a body of water like Google's has done. I think that's in Oregon. And you can power it with a dam, and you can get the water from the river. But I mean, this is something that I don't really see them addressing. And I don't know if it's because they don't want to talk about it, because it could be bad, or maybe they haven't realized it, but you're going to have an energy shortage. You're going to have an energy shortage if you don't address this fast. And it's going to become a political issue. And if you think you can just stick this to the Democrats, you're going to learn the hard way. That's not how this is going to go. So before the energy bills start ticking up again, I would move into an emergency motion on this as soon as possible. But you're going to start hearing more about that. I think you're going to start hearing more about that pretty soon. By the way, did you see the video of the electric car? It was a Ford Mustang, I guess. It was an electric car. And something went wrong and the steering locked up. And it basically rode the rail here and then got into a bad accident. Man, this is why I don't think I could ever do the self-driving car thing. This is why I don't think I could ever do it. This is why this is like my worst fear. Well, okay, I don't know if they are self-driving either, but the guy's electric vehicle, it locked up on him. So whatever electronics they have in there running that deal, it locked up on him. So yeah, that's like my ultimate fear in these electric vehicles, these self-driving vehicles. I don't think I could ever do it. Not for me. Not for me. Got to be careful with this stuff. It's kind of like this. I would not suggest this. Man develops rare health condition after ChatGPT query over stopping eating salt. It's kind of a strange headline from the Guardian there. U.S. Medical Journal article about a 6-year-old Brahmazin warns against using AI app for health information. He was asking the chatbot for health information, and he took it and then got a health condition. So you got to be careful with the AI. Got to be careful there. Yeah. Not a good situation. All right, let's hit this geopolitical stack quickly before we close out this segment. Let's start here, shall we? Well, maybe we'll wait on that. First of all, so Pete Buttigieg, he might still have political ambitions, this guy. And now he's trying to thread the needle on the whole Israel-Gaza thing because he knows enough that if you want to become president still at this point, in 4 years, probably not. But at this point, if you want to become president or you want to have political victories, you gotta get on your knees for the Israeli lobby, or at least you gotta open up your bank account for them to buy the influence. Well, he comes out and makes a statement being interpreted as anti-Israel or pro-Gaza. It's like, oh, God forbid, you don't like seeing all the death and destruction in Gaza. So now he's being criticized for that. And then now, though, the Democrats are kind of looking at this. Buttigieg discovers Democrats' 2028 litmus test, Israel. That's Politico. What have I been saying, folks? What have I been saying? This is going to be the issue. And the Democrats are seeing it. That's what I'm trying to tell people, man. Don't discount the political referendum that Mamdani is going to represent. And the Democrats are already seeing it, folks. They're already seeing it. And you know, the Politico is like, in a way, it's kind of the Democrat playbook. It's like the Democrat playbook in like mouthpiece. They just can't help it. So they know. They see this, folks. They see Mamdani and they're saying, what is he doing? What's so popular? Oh, it's the Israel thing. Okay. So I've been saying it. I've been saying this is the referendum. I've been saying that we're now two election cycles away from it being the top thing and then having a complete reversal. The Democrats are ahead of it now. The Democrats are seeing it now. They're getting it. Doesn't matter if it's a moral issue or not for them. It's all about power. So I'm just telling Republicans, man, you're about to blow this thing big and you're just not getting it. You're just not getting it at all. So I don't want to see the Democrats win. And I get, even if Republicans believe it, which they do, that Israel is our greatest ally, a lot of them still do, or at least they're paid to say it. But it's a political cancer pill. I'm telling you right now, it's a political cancer pill, and the Democrats are seeing it, folks. They're getting it. And if you're going to let them own this issue, then
Kiss the house goodbye. Kiss it goodbye. And you see all these people, they're so sick of it. I get it. I'm sick of it too. But like I say, it's in the news every day. It's the top story. It's one of the biggest political issues we're facing. And it's just true. We're on an anti-establishment campaign. That's what we're really doing here. We are on an anti-establishment campaign. Global government. The global government, the corporate world government establishment. We have devastated them. They're on the mat. The liberal, progressive liberal left political establishment. We've devastated them. They're on the map. Now what? Now we're on a new level. We're on the Israel lobby establishment. We're on the Israel controlling our foreign policy establishment. And now we're in a slobber knocker with them. We're throwing haymakers left and right. Who's going to hit the mat? Who's going to end up standing? I got news for you. It's not going to be the pro-Israel side. And it doesn't matter how much money they spend. It is not going to work. The youth is done with it. It is a political cancer pill. And the Republicans just can't leave it alone. And then it's Ted Cruz. He says, why does Tucker Carlson seem to care so much about Israel? Because he has guests on that are critical of Israel. Ted, you're literally the guy that told Tucker Carlson that how much you love Israel. That was literally you. You brought that up. You have politicians, they say, the only reason I got into politics was for Israel. So it's not a Tucker Carlson thing. This is a top story thing, and our Republican candidates seem to care more for Israel than they do us. Meet the Israeli fanatic running Ted Cruz's office. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tucker's the one obsessed with Israel. No, Ted, you're the one taking the money from the Israel lobby. You're the one with the staff that is all in for Israel, not Tucker. So that's, but again, see, like they know it, but they can't, they're all bought and paid for, so they don't know what to do. So they just continue to sell the propaganda. They just continue with the big Israel lie, and it doesn't even matter now that everybody sees how embarrassing they look when they do it. They have no choice. They're bought and paid for. It's just like Lindsey Graham. Oh, if America stops supporting Israel, then America dies. I mean, it's disgusting. Like, how could anybody ever vote for that jackass ever again? Oh, gee, I wonder why. Oh, it's not like Lindsey Graham is blackmailed. It's not like Lindsey Graham is a closeted homosexual or anything that he gets blackmailed. No way. This is Newsmax and Christopher Ruddy. They go to Israel. It's like, how do you even explain this stuff? It's insane. Listen to this. CEO of Newsmax, Christopher Ruddy, in Israel. Listen to what he says, clip two.
On October 7th, we all recognize that all people who love freedom and cherish the values of a great society, on that day, we all became Israelis, and we all stood with Prime Minister Netanyahu and the people of Israel, and we stand with you today.
You're an Israeli.
Today, we welcome a statesman who has been tested on the world stage and will continue to meet those tests with iron will and unshakable purpose. Please join me in giving a warm and heartfelt welcome to the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, look at the Qatar influence. Oh, wow. So much Qatar.
Thank you, thank you, Chris, and thank you, Newsmax, for helping us on the 8th front war.
Yeah, the propaganda.
7 fronts against Iran and its proxies. The 8th front, the battle for truth.
Yep, your propaganda.
Newsmax, you have let the truth circle the globe against the lies that have circled it before and continue to do so. There's only one way to beat the lies, and that's with the truth. Thank you for standing up with Israel. Thank you for standing up with...
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? That is rich. Honestly, the whole thing has reached unreal levels here. By the way, they claim that was the 4th of July celebration on August 13th in Israel, so that's what we're doing now, is we're celebrating the 4th of July in August by showing dependence with Israel. So Independence Day, it's supposed to be about American independence. Now it's about, you know, Israel is America and they depend on us, so we're okay with that. I mean, it's just insane. It's all Qatar influence though, don't you know? So
UEFA, European Soccer League, had a presentation at a Super Cup game. It's a big soccer game. They had a banner on the field that said, stop killing children, stop killing civilians. That's all it said while they were doing the presentation before the game. And look at some of these responses. UEFA statement on the pitch for Super Cup. They might as well have gone the whole way and written, F you Jews. So saying, stop killing children, stop killing civilians, that is F you Jews. So did you just admit that Jews are killing children and civilians? Because that's what it would appear. Here's another one. Oh, this just proves that UEFA supports Hamas. Supports Hamas. Stop killing children and civilians means you support Hamas. I'm wondering, did you think about that before you sent it? Did you read that before you sent it? Do you realize what you're saying here? Apparently not. But that just shows you how they're just totally brainwashed. It's total brainwashing on this issue.
While the concept of tinfoil hats as a defense against mind control may sound far-fetched, there's a nugget of truth in their effectiveness for blocking certain electromagnetic signals. Tinfoil hats, when properly constructed, can act as a rudimentary electromagnetic shield. They work on the principle that metal can reflect or absorb electromagnetic radiation, including radio waves and microwaves. Some conspiracy theories suggest that these types of signals are used for mind control or surveillance. Mind control is profoundly concerning because it infringes upon an individual's autonomy and freedom of thought. It involves manipulative tactics or technologies that can coerce or influence a person's beliefs, decisions, and actions against their will. This intrusion into one's cognitive and emotional processes undermines their ability to make independent choices and shapes their behavior in ways that may run counter to their values and interests.
And of course, you know where tinfoil hats come from? In the 50s and 60s, the Russians would blast our embassies with different types of radiation and microwaves. They started lining them actually with tin at first. It was actually tin, not aluminum. Old days, tin foil was tin, the metal tin, not foil. And then they would also line it with lead. So these wives' tale things, or these things we make jokes out of, we're not actually selling this to you to protect you from 5G. It really won't do that. I would imagine the studies, some of it bounces off, but not much because it shoots through everything. It's why it's so dangerous. And we've shown you the footage of plants won't even grow in 5G, plus just the regular Wi-Fi in your house. They've done university studies. But it's a lot of fun. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. You can make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hats with this bad boy. And it is a lot of fun. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Absolute style. Look how easy it was to make that. And now CNN cannot mind control me. And, you know, you can make it cooler. You can add all sorts of stuff to it. Here, I can make a Viking helmet. That looks pretty cool. Kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit. There you go. Look how fast that was. Now you're ready for the Halloween party coming up. Kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit. Well, now we're ready. And it is a lot of fun, and it supports the broadcast. And in 1995, it's a good deal. Hell, this much tinfoil costs you like $15 at the store. So this is an amazing deal, thealexjonesstore.com. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Well, I'm a tinfoil hat wearing meat-eating son of a gun, loving sun, loving hot-blooded Texian, two-stepping outlaw 3-1, looking for a little fun.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high-quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things. Not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
The beacon of truth in a world of deceit. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
How do you feel about that sound? Well, I guess depending on how old you are, you may or may not even recognize that sound. Gosh, guys, I think we're getting old here. That is the sound of AOL dial-up internet. And if you were scrolling America Online in the late 90s, early 2000s, you are all too familiar with that sound. Next month, AOL will be officially discontinuing its dial-up service. After 34 years in operation, they are cutting the service. Yeah, is that therapeutic now? What was that like for you guys? I remember at first it's like obnoxious, right? At first the sound is like obnoxious. And it's even weirder because it's like not even, it almost like the sound comes from the ether. It's like, where does the sound even come from? What is this? And then after a while, you like get used to it and you start like humming along with it, or you're with your friends, you're about to browse the internet, you're all kind of making the noise. It's just like a whole thing. I don't want it. Oh my gosh. So that's it. Oh my gosh. Who had that disc? I remember that. Do they even know what that is? Do you think they'd even know? What's the age cutoff for that? Actually, there was a funny video. It was a father and his daughter. I think she was a teenager, teenage daughter and a father. And it was like, okay, here's things. It was a younger dad. Here's things that you probably have never even heard of. You don't even know. I was actually stunned. Like a DVD? Didn't even know what a DVD was. That's wild. That's wild. That's why I say, and it might even be beyond, it might even be with your grandparents, but the world I grew up in and the world my dad grew up in are way more similar than, say, the world that you and your kids will grow up in. The world that you and your children will grow up in are going to be completely different experiences, where the world that me and my father grew up in, very, very similar, things we can relate to. Now it's just like totally different world, completely different. And then imagine, because it only goes exponentially faster. It doesn't slow down. So that's it, though. You won't be hearing that noise anymore. Unless you want to source out that sound and play it on YouTube or something. Maybe you do. I don't know. Put it on repeat. Boy, oh boy. Let's just exhaust these videos here, and then we will maybe take a couple more calls, a couple more headlines, final segment of today's show. Dr. Peter McCullough. This is just devastating news, folks. This is crazy. And I mean, it's so strange to sit here and think about that time. It seems so long ago. It seems so foreign now. Warning people against the vaccines. And you don't even really chalk it up on a board because it's just like, how do you even measure this stuff? But I mean, it had to be some of the most important work we've ever done. When you just think about the ramifications. So listen to Dr. Peter McCullough talking about what they've discovered more than 3 years after the mRNA here in clip 7.
I finished with a patient today. He is in research. We're using a lab in Germany. We have detectable Pfizer messenger RNA in his body now, 3.2 years after the shots. For sure. For sure. So people who took these shots, they've got it. They've got it at least long term now. And I've testified in the House last year and I said, listen, I think we got 5 to 15 years, of concern here. This is very long acting genetic material. And I think we should assume that all messenger RNA coming forward is going to be very long acting in the body and we need to be prepared for it.
Yeah. And so that's one angle of the insane corruption and crimes against humanity that came from the pandemic. But listen to this one. Report from OAN here. I mean, folks, as if you didn't have enough evidence that the whole thing was planned, this is like the cherry on top. The whole thing was planned, folks. The whole pandemic was a planned event. Unbelievable stuff. Listen to this in clip 12.
Well, in the wake of the virus, investors who bought pandemic bonds from the World Bank in 2017 are set to lose hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's one America's Pearson Sharp.
Following the outbreak of the coronavirus, investors who bought bonds from the World Bank back in 2017 are set to lose hundreds of millions of dollars. After the last outbreak of Ebola 3 years ago, the World Bank issued what's called pandemic bonds in an effort to raise money in case of another global viral catastrophe. The funding from these bonds would then be used to help support nations suffering from the infections, whether it be Ebola or some other disease. During a crisis, it's often difficult for relief agencies to get the money they need, and so the idea was to have the money already on hand when an emergency strikes. Investors eagerly bought up the bonds, worth about $500 million, ordering more than two times the amount which were being offered. The bonds had a high yield rate of nearly 12% and were set to mature in July of this year. But as always, there was a catch. If another major global outbreak occurred, investors would lose all their money. The deal clearly outlines the requirements for triggering such an event, specifically mentioning that if there's an outbreak of coronavirus, payment of bonds would be suspended. The agreement states that if more than 2,500 people die across at least 8 different countries, investors will get nothing. 2 weeks ago, the bonds were worth 60% of what investors paid. Today, they're worth just 10%. Under the deal, the maximum potential payout is no more than $195 million.
I mean, folks, it's crazy. And it really shows you how corrupt our planet is. How sickly corrupt, really. How demonic our leaders are. Truly demonic. And I think it's so hard to comprehend because you can't even enter that type of headspace. You couldn't even think about, let's run a global criminal enterprise and then let's just rob everybody's money and let's make a virus and release it and then scam everybody to stay home for a year. I mean, you couldn't even comprehend being so maniacal. And yet these are the people that run the planet. There they are. Okay, hurricane season. They've got the cones. You know, by the way, if you're not in the cone, then you're probably going to get hit, by the way. So first, Hurricane Aaron was going to go out into the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, now it's going in, and they think it might hit Puerto Rico. Let's just pray this thing doesn't hit America. Let's just pray this thing doesn't hit Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Cuba. Let's just pray this thing stays out there. But they're thinking this thing could be a big one. And all the cones right now are not hitting America, which makes me think, oh boy, the cones never are right. So if the cones say it's not going to hit us, it's like, that's when you bet it will hit us. So we'll be monitoring this hurricane season. You feel like we're getting hit with weather weapons all the time now. Another flood. 4 killed in historic flooding in East Tennessee as Chattanooga faces continued rain threat. Just massive flooding, record flooding in the summer. Wild stuff. Wild stuff. All right, taking a call here. Let's go to Tim in California. Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right, then, Owen. Thank you. Great show today, as always. You know, many different topics that you've hit on while I was on hold that I would just like to quickly hit. First off, when it comes to Social Security, Donald Trump, the president of the United States today, was speaking from the Oval Office, and he mentioned that there was 12.4 million people on the rolls of Social Security that are over 120 years old. As alarming as that is, 12.4 million over 120 years old. But then he went on to say there's actually 135,000 that are over 160 years old. And, of course, he couldn't help but mention many of these people are still cashing checks. Well, let's move on to the next subject. When it comes
I just want to see. You know that that was discovered by Doge like 3 months ago.
Right, right. But he's, I guess what he's saying is we're going to clean it up. And I believe it's true. I really do believe he's going to.
Well, here's what's wild. And this is like, I don't know. I scratch my head. Doge discovered this 3 months ago, and it was just like, how can we still be dealing with this? Why wasn't it shut down immediately, and why wasn't it investigated where the payments were going? I mean, it's just like, what are we doing? I don't get it.
The government is like turning an ocean liner around in the middle of a tiny little river. It takes a little time.
And yeah, I guess.
Get this too. Hey, I saw Bill Gates. He was at a plant. This is years ago. I saw it on you guys. You showed it. He's standing in some plant that's taking poop water and filtering it to where you could just drink it. And they made him a little glass of distilled poop water, and he drank it. And I thought, why on earth would he do that? And part of it is the AI thing. I brought this to Alex. One of the few times I've ever spoken to Alex, and it was because they were reopening Three Mile Island, the biggest nuclear disaster in all of United States history. That thing's been shut down for 40-plus years. And he signed some agreement where they're going to fire that thing up again at great risk to the general public. And no matter how well it goes, he gets all of the power no matter what. And I guess we just take all the risk. But regardless of all that, this AI needs lots and lots and lots of water.
Yeah.
It's going to need a lot of water.
Well, that's why I've been sitting here pounding this issue. They're putting the cart before the horse. I mean, I could focus on the AI angle, but there's other issues with it too. But they're putting the cart before the horse here. We don't have the energy. We don't have the water. So I just don't understand. I don't know where this is going. I feel like the tech guys got in there and maybe kind of took advantage of Trump's ignorance on this and just said, oh yeah, let's just get it into motion. Here's all the good stuff. And he said, hey, sounds great. But nobody really presented him the negative side effects or said, or nobody came into his ear and said, hey, Mr. President, we don't have the infrastructure for this yet.
I knew you hit all this, Owen, but let me give you one more. This is my parting shot. I saw two things where, hey, Zoran Mandami is going to be on the cover of Time magazine. It's called The Meaning of Zoran Mandami. And he says, hey, he's a democratic socialist. What he really is he's a Muslim Marxist. But regardless, it should be noted that the guy that had the Muslim Brotherhood come to the White House dozens of times, according to the check-in log, a former president, Barack Obama, he called Zoran Mamdani. And I would love to be a fly on the wall and find out, hey, are you trying to tell him, yeah, I've been staying here in Washington, D.C. all these years just waiting to clobber him, and now you're here too, and this is New York City. It's the financial capital of the world. We're just going to sneak in here. Nobody's even going to notice, just like AOC and all the others. We're just going to slam them. They won't even be – they're going to be asleep, won't even see it coming.
Well, everybody sees it coming.
Sorry.
They're in denial, though.
Yeah, but just say, man, I cannot believe – New York City, financial capital of the world, is going to sit there and let what he declares himself to be a democratic socialist. He is a Muslim Marxist, okay? That's what he is. And you're going to sit there and elect that guy to overthrow it? He even looks like Fidel Castro. You're not old enough to remember all this stuff in the 60s. Man, when I look at him talking, I remember the way Fidel Castro looked. And you want your country to end up like that? Go look at what Cuba looks like today, my friends. They're stuck in the 1950s. All the cars they drive are ones they keep fixing up from the 1950s. They're stuck in the 1950s.
Yeah, well, I think I look at that and I say the election, should Mamdani win, is a result of bad Republican leadership. But also, I mean, who's even on the ticket? They don't even have anybody good on the ticket. I mean, Curtis Sliwa is a really nice guy and a great American, but he can't win a mayor's race. It's already been proven. Cuomo? I mean, Cuomo? This guy's known as the grandma killer. What do you mean Cuomo? Eric Adams is the only shot you got, but Cuomo's still in there, and Sliwa's like, no, everybody get, so it's just, they're gonna hand it to him. They're gonna hand it to him, and it's gonna be a political referendum, and the Republicans are gonna ignore it and pretend like, they're shocked and they don't understand. And then if they just carry that energy into the midterms, it's gonna be a mess, I think, Tim. Thank you for the call. I guess, Nolan wants to talk about this too, or talk about something in New York. Nolan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I remember you guys used to play the clip a lot, and that's, I think it's probably the first time I heard it too, but the My Dinner with Andre clip about New York, it's just like so perfect now. It's kind of crazy how much it honestly reflects today. But
all right, that it?
No, that I thought I lost you there for a second.
What is the name of the movie?
My Dinner with Andre, or maybe My Lunch with Andre. And there's,
I don't
a
know.
Clip
I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, it's perfect. You guys should try to play it before you're out today. It's only like a minute and a half long. I think you just type in My Dinner with Andre, New York scene, and he talks about how New Yorkers are building this prison around him. It's a great clip. You should play it. And another thing, I listened to your Rumble stream the other night, and I heard you talking about how you kind of want to get back into doing more streams on there and stuff, and but how you are also burnt out on politics and all of that. And I was thinking, well, if you're burnt out on politics, why don't you kind of take your mind off of that and do a stream on Rumble every, you know, once a week or something? Do you still follow sports?
No, not really. I mean, it's in my peripheral.
Well, yeah, I think that would be kind of cool to do something like a sports stream maybe once a night. On
Yeah, I've thought about that. Well, look, let me respond to that. Oh, okay. I've seen this scene before. We've played this scene before. I know what you're talking about now. I've not seen the movie, but we've definitely played the scene. Let me just briefly respond to that. Well, I don't even know if it's worth it. I don't even know if it's worth it, really. It's like you may have seen, it's all in the news this week about them coming in to shut down InfoWars. And so I like roller coasters, but you know, you stay on a roller coaster for 50 straight rides, you know, you're like, okay, need to get off for a second here, get my legs back. But it's like, yeah, I mean, they could come in here right now and shut this place down. So it's like, how do I take time off with that at stake? But I'll tell you what, having said that, I am taking a long weekend. And, you know, the other day, I guess it's good TV because it definitely gets viral views. But, like, the other day when Alex came in here and said I was too negative, I disagree. I think I'm just addressing the things as I see them. But, you know, maybe there's an element of truth to it where it's just like, okay, well, maybe I do just need to step away. It's like, maybe you do. Maybe I am a little too negative because I just stare into the abyss and the darkness with foresight, with future sight. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a negative or positive thing. I think I call it as I see it thing, but it's like, yeah, maybe I do need to just step away and not look at it for a minute. So I do intend to take a long weekend. So tomorrow Harrison will be hosting this show and we're going to have a guest host Monday as well. And who knows if we're still on air, you know, next week, maybe I decide to extend it a little bit, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want it to look like, okay, they're shutting it down and then I'm not here. Like I'm avoiding it or abandoning ship, you know. Plus I want to be here. I mean, this is a lifeblood for me. The crew, the audience. So, but yeah, I'll leave it at that for now. But speaking of sports, you got every team now has gay, cheerleaders, by the way, for the NFL. Just wacky stuff going on. John Gruden wins Nevada Supreme Court arbitration appeal against NFL and Roger Goodell. So Gruden, who basically got blackballed from the league because of a racist email, is winning. So that's interesting. And by the way, the NFL has another issue too. A coach is crying racism, says the NFL is racist when it comes to hiring. I'm sitting here like, are you kidding me? I don't know. Is there an enterprise? Is there a business that's made more black Americans millionaires than the NFL? I'm serious. Is there? But it's racist, says Brian Flores. And he still has a job. He's still a coach, by the way. Now he's suing the NFL for racism. So they got some deals there. They're about to kick off a new season with a bunch of gay cheerleaders now. So if you have a front row NFL ticket, you're going to have a gay man, waving pom-poms and shaking his ass in your face. Football. Why do they do this to us? You know, it's like, why do you have to do this to us? Why? You know, Elon Musk earlier today was pointing out that China has built a new high-speed train, can travel 1,000 kilometers an hour. That means nothing to an American, but anyway. Ultra-fast vacuum tube magnetic levitation system. Have I not been talking about maglev technology for how long? It's so crazy, man. So Musk is like, we need to do this in America. Absolutely. And you know what, Elon? Maybe if they would have done the Doge cuts that you presented, maybe we could actually do it. If we did $1 trillion in Doge cuts, we could build 10 maglev high-speed rails. We could build one across the entire country just for fun with that money. But we don't get that, do we? We get waste, fraud, and abuse instead. I mean, the dirty commies in China, folks, this is embarrassing. The dirty commies in China do better infrastructure than we do. We should be embarrassed. We should be ashamed. We should be looking in the mirror and kicking ourselves saying, why is it that dirty commies do infrastructure better than us? But we all know why, because our money goes to foreign and special interests. So we don't get high-speed rails. China does. The commies do. Not us. Not the free people. The commies. It's infuriating. But we get a robot fight club, apparently. San Francisco has a robot fight club. Okay. Will they try to make that illegal? I don't know. Maybe. Just maybe they end up making it illegal. All right, let's go with a little comedy as we close out the show here. Sorry to the callers we didn't get to. Gerrymandering. Somebody decided to gerrymander their apartment, and it went like this, clip 13.
Ridiculous!
You said I need to start taking care of my star. I'm drunk. Sir. I'm marking what is mine.
You're gerrymandering the apartment.
These are my highly frequented areas. This is my chair. God. This chair was promised to my family 30 years ago.
We bought it off Facebook Marketplace last month.
This is ridiculous. Hey, come on, you gerrymandered the TV.
Just the Netflix icon. That's my ex-girlfriend's account. I still have a login.
I don't need to do the chair.
You've eaten my food before.
This is leading into my room.
That's an annex. All right, don't look at it. Come on.
Are you kidding me?
What?
The lotion? What is that?
Okay, that's where I sit.
Hey, what's going on in here?
Hey there, Chris is marking his territory in the apartment.
Oh, that's so weird.
Hey, what the hell is that?
Son of a bitch! That's my girlfriend!
I'm looking to redistrict it!
Gerrymandering with a hint of comedy. All right, that does it for today's show. Well, I will say this. If anything goes down here, I'll be back. But I do plan on taking a long weekend. Don't miss me too much, all right? I'll still be on X. Don't miss me too much. We'll be back. But yeah, we'll take a little time off, hit the reset button, refresh the batteries,
get some good time with nature, maybe. And then we'll see you next week.
We need funds. We're fighting the globalists at Point Blank Range. And they got a receivership hearing with Judge Gloria Gamble that ran the Texas show trial next week to send the sheriffs here. I get it could be within days next Wednesday to shut us down. And I'm sure we'll get lots of funds then once we're shut down. Be like, oh, God, he really did need help. Oh, yeah. We have been battling and barely surviving. They turned the internet off here before. They had a fake sale to Bloomberg's front group. Remember all that? And it was because we didn't give up and the crew didn't give up. When I told the crew, no, we're going to beat this, don't go, and I stayed here and slept here a couple times, that we're still here. And because you bought the products, we had enough money for lawyers to go battle it and beat it. Everybody listening needs to get off the fence, get off the bench, get up at the plate, and needs to go become a VIP. $30 a month, see it as a donation. You get $40 each month to spend in the store, sales on top of everything, special deals, special offers just to you. It's insane. And then if you really just want to support and you don't want methylene blue or turmeric, you're crazy if you don't, or Ultimate Life Force, the best cardiovascular spike protein detox, everybody should be taking it. I mean, it's the best. Ultimate Life Force is the best cardiovascular, heart health, spike protein detoxer. Every man, woman, and child should take at least one regimen of it, see how you feel. It does dramatic things. We have the strongest turmeric. You should get it. And I got a lot of news to cover. I won't sit here and beat a dead horse, but the news we get out is so powerful, and it's that less than 1% of people that buy stuff at theauctionstore.com that make all this possible. And this fight is your fight. They want us off the air because they want to shut down focal points of organizations that hold the Trump administration's feet to the fire and warn Trump and warn his advisors and have a big effect and big pull, as the administrations have said and as the Democrats have said. They've come after Trump. They've sued Trump. They've had their operatives in there, and they see our stuff everywhere. Step into the zone of history and understand that you are the key. You are the variable. You are the Paul Revere's. You are the resistance. And this dog don't hunt without you.